Good morning, everyone. If you are joining us today, you are here for the Finance and Economic Resiliency Committee. And with that, Raphael, would you let everybody know how they could join if they're listening?
Sure. Good morning. In order to participate in today's meeting virtually, members of the public may dial 1-888-475-4499 and enter the webinar ID, which is 863-6059-5462#. Or you could log into the Zoom app and enter the webinar ID, which again is 863-6059-5462. If you wish to speak on an item, just click the raise hand icon if you're using the Zoom app, or dial star 9 if you're participating by phone.
Thank you, Mr. City Attorney. Let's take care of a couple of quick ones. Do we have any announcements first, John?
Just that item 1 has been deferred.
Item 1, that is Vice Mayor Fernandez, that's deferred. Okay, we'll show that item as deferred. And then the item 16 discussed vested employees in Tier B that had been rehired. There was some confusion about item. That item is deferred. It's showing deferred in one list and not deferred in another. So I just want to be clear, that's my item, and I know staff is doing some additional work on that item. Also, okay, perfect. And then item 12 is also my item concerning the Inspector General's office. That is the substantive question of where internal audit should be, and I'm deferring that substantive discussion until such time as we can discuss this Wednesday the Inspector General's behavior concerning the item. Because I believe he has been interfering with public policy making, and we're going to have that discussion at the commission on Wednesday. So we'll defer the substantive question until we get through the discussion concerning his behavior. Let's take item 13, because I think that one's going to be very quick. That is employment rules and procedures. Someone from staff, I think, is here from personnel. And my Adam, we're going to dispense with this quickly because I brought this item thinking I was going to do an ordinance, but it's my understanding that you all believe staff, the administration believes we can handle this administratively. Is that right?
Hi, good morning. Marla Alpizar, Director of Human Resources. Yes, sir, Chair. That is correct. We have added an additional item to the outside employment form that employees are required to sign, validating that they are asserting that their outside employment does not arise any kind of an ethical conflict.
Okay, yes. And I brought this item because of a situation that occurred. So with that, I'm satisfied that you're handling it administratively, and with that, I'm withdrawing the item. So thank you very much. That item closed.
I have a question.
Yes, absolutely. Vice Mayor, go ahead.
Does this apply to elected officials as well?
No, it was applicable to a city employee. I brought the item because of an issue that occurred some months back where an employee was had an outside consulting engagement and was also a city employee, and I felt like there was a conflict of interest and it wasn't addressed.
Okay.
The city administration has to approve those and without getting into all the details.
Yeah. That's good.
And Mr. Chair, if I could just address that for elected officials, certainly all of the conflict of interest requirements in the county code and state law would apply to any employment. You don't have to fill out an HR form for outside employment, but we do go through the conflict exercise on a routine basis.
I'll get with you, Mr. Attorney, at the right time to discuss an ethics ordinance. I want to bring forward sponsorships of city-sponsored events, making sure that no elected official, none of our family members or anything like that are benefiting from any city-sponsored event that we fund.
We'd be happy to talk to you about that, Commissioner.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. With that, I'd like to recognize the city manager who wants to make an introduction.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and everyone. I apologize for running in a bit out of breath. As you know, we're preparing for commission week, and we've got a multitude of meetings going on at the same time. But I did want to take the opportunity, because it's such a a critical moment to have the transition of a CFO. And as most of you know, John has resigned to pursue other career alternatives, and we're very happy for him. At the same time, it's a sad time for the city of Miami Beach. He has been an instrumental part of us, of our family, has led the finances of the city with integrity, has done an outstanding job in working on multiple budgets that I've been involved with since my tenure here. And so I didn't want this opportunity in committee to pass without recognizing his efforts and thanking him for his commitment at the appropriate time. I know we will be able to do that in front of the entire commission as well. And I wanted to take the opportunity to welcome Kathy as our interim CFO. I think all of you know Kathy very well. You know of her incredible integrity, her commitment to the city. She's a resident. She's a former interim city manager, a former ACM, and a person who has extreme knowledge. And it's very important that we have this level of professionalism in two outstanding members of our family, and that we have a really good and solid transition, especially at a time when we are, our residents have voted for an arts and culture GOB. There's a lot of exciting things that are happening in our city, and it's very critical to me and to all of us, obviously, that we have good continuity. We are engaged in a search for a future CFO, but I wanted to take the opportunity to just be here for a couple minutes and make sure that we did this introduction properly and that we said our farewell and thank you to John, which we will continue to do throughout the rest of the month, and that we welcome Kathy with the affection and respect that she deserves. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Manager. And John, I know we'll have another opportunity on Wednesday to throw rose petals at your feet and tell you how wonderful it's been. And Kathy, I look forward to working with you. We've obviously knew each other years ago when I was a state representative when you were the interim manager. So I very much look forward to you. Members, any other comments? Or let's with that. Thank you, Madam Manager, and welcome Kathy and John. We'll be bringing those roses on Wednesday. Thank you very much. With that, we've got a time certain at 10 o'clock, but we've got a little bit of time, so I want to call the waste hauler item. We've got two items, which is my item number two, and Commissioner, our Vice Mayor Fernandez, you have an item as well. So item two, and can someone help me? What's your item, Vice Mayor?
My item was number three, establishing a maximum for waste.
There water. It is. Yeah. Thank you. So let's call two and three together. They're sort of traveling together. And this, I think, is an update and also an opportunity for us to hear from the Vice Mayor concerning his item, because we haven't heard that before. So with that, go ahead, Joe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, members of the committee and members of the administration. Joe Gomez, Public Works Director, for the record. PJ, if you would, if you could put up the presentation. This is very brief, Mr. Chair.
That's one of my favorite words, brief.
Brief, yes, sir, I know. Next, please. So this is just an update from our last meeting that we had back in July. So just as a summary, we looked at in the direction that we received at the July 29th meeting. First and foremost was a committee requested the administration to continue to explore the non-exclusive agreements, continue the discussion with the waste hauler community, review other non-exclusive agreements for possible pricing controls, see if there's any out there, and consider price caps for multifamily of 8 to 25 units, which I believe is the Vice of Mayor's item. There was also discussion about exploring commercial broker regulations, and I highlighted this in blue because I believe that this is a topic that should be discussed at a separate time. Next, please. So we had a meeting with the waste haulers on August of 26. That was attended by us, the city staff, our consultant MSW, and waste haulers, including both of our franchisees, Waste Management, Waste Connections, and then several other prominent waste haulers in the community that attended that. There's minutes of the meeting, a part of the package. I'm just going to summarize very briefly some of the discussion. Next, please. In terms of the type of agreement, we posed a question to the waste haulers, and all agreed that the non-exclusive model works best for commercial franchises. It's better suited for Miami Beach. We posed a question also as to the number of franchises. They said a minimum of two, but perhaps the city should consider three. As a reminder, the ordinance does allow you to select up to five. Some of the concerns that they brought up in terms of pricing considerations, the costs in Miami Beach tend to be higher because of the traffic. We have a very defined grid system, which it is problematic sometimes for the waste haulers. The in-kind services that we require of our waste haulers, the financial contributions, and service times restrictions. We have very specific requirements as to when they can operate within the city. They also brought up the issue, obviously, which is an impact that we felt all across the board, cost increases in fuel, materials, shortage of commercial drivers, delays in fleet equipment because of the supply chain issues, all that, those are costs that are being passed on to the consumer. So the next step we did was, after concluding that meeting, was researching other non-exclusive agreements. Next, please. We looked at eight other non-exclusive agreements in Florida and five other non-exclusive agreements throughout the country, including Austin, Texas, Denver, Colorado, and three in California, Pasadena, Sacramento, and Los Angeles, California. And the conclusion after reviewing all these agreements is none of non-exclusive agreements have any type of pricing controls within them. There's no prices established beforehand. The pricing is dynamically set by the market, meaning as the franchise or the works with the generator, meaning the customer, prices are determined based on their specific needs. There is language in the agreements that states the pricing will be generated, specific language that says that pricing will be between the generator, the customer again, and the hauler. Now, some municipalities do have some strict reporting requirements. Next, please. In terms of reporting requirements, Section 11 of our non-exclusive agreement, the one we currently have with our two franchisees, says the franchisee shall keep accurate set of books reflecting gross receipts. However, the city does not require periodic reporting, which is very important because we looked at other non-exclusive agreements throughout the nation and locally, and many have a reporting requirement, whether it's quarterly or on a monthly basis. For example, the city of Pasadena requires monthly. Others, such as Austin, Denver, and Sacramento County, they require quarterly reports. And those are in either an email form or an online tool that the city sets up, the municipality sets up. So in terms of our recommendations to you today, we're recommending that we proceed forward with procuring non-exclusive agreements for the renewal of the franchises. As you know, we're on a month-to-month extension, which expires at September the 30th of 2023. We're recommending a minimum of two, but I think a better approach would be maybe a maximum of three, and one of those would be a smaller local hauler, which would provide some sort of a competition between the larger companies. I definitely think we need to strengthen the reporting requirements. I think we're recommending to you submit quarterly reports, and those reports would include the number of accounts served, tonnage of material by source type, and vehicle information, which is all very important in terms of customer service. And then Section 11 does allow for audits, for us to conduct audits. The audits can identify variability in the rates, but we will not be able to negotiate rates with them because the nature of the non-exclusive agreement is that pricing is not a determining factor. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'll open it up to any questions you or the committee may have, and we look forward to a favorable recommendation.
Let me ask a couple of questions, then I want to recognize the Vice Mayor to talk about his item. Homeowners, the individual homes, is that an exclusive?
That is an exclusive. The residential contract is an exclusive agreement.
And when you did this research of other communities in Florida and nationally, did you look at the number on the non-exclusive? Is it two, three, four, five? What's typical?
It depends. It's all over the board, Mr. Chair. For example, in Los Angeles, they have up to 18, I believe, but it's a much larger metropolitan area, so they divide the area by zones, which is typically how some of these non-exclusive agreements are done. And I apologize for my voice. I'm fighting a little bit of a cold. But the premise of that, the franchise, is that they give them a specific geographic area to maintain.
Yeah. I don't know how my members feel about this. I'm not ready to move this out of committee yet. I think there are questions that still need to be answered. So one of the things that you haven't discussed is that the fee that the franchise has to pay. I mean, we're looking at pricing, right? And sure. So it's my understanding the individual homeowners don't pay that, or the hauler doesn't pay that, but we pay it on these
under the commercial franchise agreement. The fee that they pay to the city is 20%, currently at 20%.
20%. So if a person lives in a condominium versus a house, all other things being equal, they're paying a 20% tax. Is that right? I call it a tax because it's a fee that I think gets passed on to the consumer. John, do we know how much money the city brings in revenue from this tax?
We do. I don't have it handy, but it's certainly something we incorporate into the next iteration of the memo.
Okay. Members, I don't want to move this out. I would like that question answered. I would like some research done on that. Also, Mr. Gomez, and thank you for the work on this, I would like to see on these samples that you have pulled how many waste haulers are in other communities. I think it's very hard to have really, really true competition with two, and so I'm leaning on wanting to have more. With that, Mr. Vice Mayor, I'd like to recognize you. You have an item, and tell us your dream.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My item is about establishing a maximum fee for waste hauler services for multifamily dwellings of less than 25 units. I just have a question. The code right now establishes a fixed fee for single-family residential waste services and also for multifamily with less than 9 units. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Have we reached out to the franchise haulers and see if they can establish a cap among multifamily properties between 8 and 25 units?
Thank you for the question, Vice Mayor. Yes, we did. They are here today prepared to address that question. And I can, in summary, the answer is no.
They have not?
No. They have reached back out to us, and their answer is no, that they can't cap it. But here?
That's going to be a very important factor for me as I consider this. I would like to ask the administration to come back and to please propose a specific fee or maximum fee to establish in the code for these types of properties. I think we're living in a situation right now where our residents and our constituents are facing a lot of fees, a lot of increases, and to the extent that we can establish a cap on some of those, I think this would be one avenue to do that. So, Mr. Chair, I agree with you. I'd like to keep this in committee. We need to realize that whenever we leave fees open-ended that landlords have to pay for when they increase, then that's passed along, that burden is passed along to tenants. So this is one way of addressing some of those concerns. So, yeah, I would like to continue this in committee, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Mitch Bierman with Weiss, Serota, Helfman, Cole, and Bierman, and my client in this is Waste Connections, which is the city's residential hauler, that exclusive contract that the chair was referring to earlier, and is one of the two current commercial franchisees. One thing that you might consider, and at the risk of sounding self-serving, is to just put more of the multifamily residential into the residential contract, because that then leaves it with a capped fee, gets it out of paying the franchise fee that the chair was talking about earlier, and that would be one way of accomplishing what you want. With respect to commercial rates, it's very As you can imagine, given the extreme volatility in our economy right now in terms of inflation, it is very difficult to come up with a number that can be the same number for years on end. And I think that if the market had to figure out a way to do that, the starting number would be higher than what most people would want. So the other thing about the fluctuations is that as the fuel prices fluctuate downward, those savings do get passed on to the commercial customers. And a fixed fee wouldn't do that. It would lock it in, and it would probably have to be higher in order to anticipate the potential fluctuations in not only fuel prices, but labor, which has become, almost unmanageable situation across the board in terms of being able to have drivers and handlers, as well as the cost of the vehicles, which have doubled in the last few years, et cetera. So those are the concerns that when the director is saying that the industry came back and didn't have the answer that you wanted, those are what went into it. But one possible other scenario would be to treat those multifamily residential as residential properties and fold them into the residential contract. Thank you.
Well, one, you know, I don't think the vice mayor is talking about a fixed fee. What he's talking about is
a cap.
And so if you have a fixed, it's a different situation.
Can still fluctuate down if it's a cap.
So I would encourage you all in the industry to reach out to us and to discuss this with us, because I don't know, you know, we're going to have some additional information in January, which is the next meeting that finance will have, concerning these other cities and municipalities, what they're doing, if any of them have any caps. I'm curious to learn about that. The other thing is, I want to talk about this franchise fee that you know gets collected on behalf of the city, because a condominium owner is starting off 20 or 24% behind before they do anything, because that's a tax that's imposed on them and not on a single family home. And I don't know how that ever got done, but I want to know the history of that. So we're not having a meeting in December, so the item will be heard in January. I think we're going to try to schedule the meeting for January 20th. That hasn't been set yet. But with that, members, I'd like to continue the item, and let's continue to ask questions, and let's get this additional information and bring it before the committee on the January meeting. Okay,
Mr. Chair, I just want to add a comment. Two compliments. One is the way that this committee has handled these items with deliberation and gathering all the possible facts. It's very refreshing, and it shows that you consider this a partnership for the benefit of your constituents and your businesses. The second is with respect to your staff, which sought input in a very meaningful way, and then that input made it into that market input, as well as the input from the customers, made it into this report, which we think is a very sound report. And I just wanted to
thank you. And if there are other cities that have not been included in the staff's report that you think that this committee should consider, then please move that along to us as well.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
All right. With that, I'd like to close this item out, and we'll continue it until January, okay?
Yes. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. And with that, we have a time certain on item number 17, at 10 a.m., and I gave Mr. Leichhardt a time certain because he kind of got disadvantaged in the last meeting because we ran out of time. And so I want to make sure your item got heard because it's the fair thing to do. So with that, let's have staff tee it up. This is, an unsolicited proposal that came in on 1262, the parking lot. You're recognized.
Good morning. Ozzie Dominguez, Division Director of Asset Management for the City of Miami Beach. This is a discussion item for parking lot P16, which is at 1262 Collins Avenue, for an unsolicited proposal from Location Ventures LLC, also referred to as LV. This original proposal came in 2021 and has been revised. They submitted a new proposal now in October. The new proposal will consist of a mixed-use project and taking this parking lot from 50 spaces to 169 spaces. However, there's going to be a mixed-use component to it, so there's going to be office and retail. There's going to be requirements for parking spaces for the office and retail, and LV is also requesting that 60 of the spaces be available to them for their project that is down the street. Of which those 60 spaces, 20 of them would be available back to the city in the evenings. This would have a net impact of an additional 6 spaces overall for the project as it stands today. I'm sorry? I think it came in as supplemental.
It was published on Thursday night. There was some confusion about the item. It was not deferred, and the sponsor had to discuss that with the staff. The staff erred, and that's okay. We all make mistakes. It was not deferred, and so this was published online as a supplement on Thursday night. So. But we're going to hear the item, Commissioner, and if the committee decides that we want to keep it here, we'll keep it. But go ahead. You're continue.
Thank you very much. The current parking lot currently generates about $420,000 a year. LV is proposing a $400,000 annual rent with a 3% increase year after year. And they will have they're going to be doing the full build-out of the new mixed-use project, which is going to be in excess of 135,000 square feet. 29,000 of it will be the commercial leasable space, so it'll be an income-producing property. And then it'll have about 106,000 square feet for parking space. They do expect to have a 10% internal rate of return on this project. And turn it back over to the city after 17 years, although this is going to be a 99-year lease. But it'll be a paid-out project, fully income-generating, and at that point, the city will be able to, receive all of the income that the property is generating. LV has requested that the city accept the proposed unsolicited bid and direct the administration to publish notice as required by Section 255.065 of Florida statutes. And allowing a period of 60 days, there is a maximum of 120 days under that statute, but allowing 60 days to see if any other competitive bids come in. Some important points to keep in mind is that this area is in dire need of parking space, and we have G1, which is on 7th and Washington, that is going to be lost back to Goldman Properties in 2026. And that has a total of 646 spaces that the city will lose control of. We also have G2 parking space, which is on a parking garage, which is on 12th and Washington, and G3 on 13th and Collins, both of which are always full and in great demand. And then we have P16, which is a smaller open lot currently with 50 spaces and always occupied and full. With all of these components in the proposal as sent in right now, the administration and also considering the loss of the G1 parking garage, which is a mammoth component of the parking facilities in this area, the administration does recommend that a full parking study be conducted, and the study determine what the impact of these. Public-private partnership would bring. They're also requiring a 90-foot height, so they would need a waiver. What kind of an impact that 90-foot height of this new structure would bring, and then determine, if the city should consider developing their own parking lot here, and if the return on investment for the city managing and overseeing their own redevelopment can bring in a better return for us. But if, the Finance and Economic Resiliency Committee does decide that this is in the best interest of the city, then we request that it move forward to commission. And we do have LV here present.
Let me just remind everybody where we're at. This, has been in the committee months now. Mm-hmm. And I remember from the time that Commissioner Samuelin sat with us, and he was supportive. And I think that we ask staff and also the offeror to go back and do some additional work, because we wanted to look at what the revenue stream would be with two levels of office space as opposed to one, right?
Correct.
And so I think the and it's my understanding it added about $1 million a year to the revenue stream. And originally the plan was to turn this back over to the city after a certain number of years with the debt remaining.
Correct.
And what I said to the offeror is I think it would be better to keep it in their hands until the debt is fully serviced and to give it back to the city debt-free. So, and I think that is now in the tune of 16 to 17 years, and they can correct me if I'm wrong. And then, so in the interim, it's my understanding the city would continue to get its revenue stream that it enjoys now, about $420,000, with I think a 3%
increase.
3% a year increase. So the city would continue to get that that same enjoyment of revenue stream, but in 17 years or 16 years, then the asset would come back to the city whatever it's valued at that time.
Correct.
So with that, Mr. Larkin, you're here. Let's recognize you and see if you'd like to add something to the conversation. And then I guess the committee's going to make a decision if we want to keep it here another month or if we want to move it back out. So go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. PJ, could you pull up the presentation? So good morning, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners Michael Larkin, 200 South Biscayne Boulevard, here representing Location Ventures. With me today is Leonard Roberts from Location Ventures and my colleague Emily Balter. So the construction and operation of a mixed-use building here will bring several benefits to the city above and beyond what it is now as a surface parking lot or even a primary use garage. First is the value. The value increases from $6 million to $81 million. At the 17-year mark, you all get the asset back debt-free. Number two, the revenue increases from just over $400,000 a year to $5.6 million on an annual basis. Number three, the parking spaces. They will be doubled at the exact time when you need them the most, which is during the week after 5 and on the weekends. They'll go from 50 spaces to 129 spaces. The Class A office space. You all need to diversify this area because it truly is not a neighborhood now. It's just an area that's oversaturated with tourism, and you all need to put the building blocks into place in order to start evolving this area into a true neighborhood. You changed the label of it a couple of years ago from entertainment district to arts and culture district, but little, precious little has been done to address the change of this neighborhood in a substantive way. Commissioner Richardson tried with his Ocean Drive legislation, that was withdrawn. Mayor Gelber tried with his Collins Avenue legislation, that was withdrawn. And finally, Commissioner Areola with his arts and culture bond hit the mark, and the voters approved it. This is a sign to me that the voters, our residents, want to turn the page. They want to shed our party atmosphere. And one way to do that is to change the character of this neighborhood. And that's precisely the golden opportunity that we all are giving you. With regard to the staff analysis, I just want to correct some inaccuracies and make some comments. On page 2 in the analysis, it says the maximum height is 75 feet here. That's not correct. It's 50 feet. And we don't need a code amendment in order to go up to 90 feet. It's a waiver, just like you all did the 23rd Street garage. There you waive the maximum height. You went from 50 to 75 feet. On page 3, under parking garage G, the purchase option, it is true the Goldman family does have the option to exercise to buy this garage in 2026, but that doesn't mean these 646 spaces disappear. They are converted from municipal spaces to private spaces. And what might change would be the hourly rate, which is, you know, antiquated now, and it doesn't comport with the market. That will go up, but the 646 spaces will remain in the inventory. With regard to page 3, proposed parking rates at our proposed mixed-use building, LV would not have ownership of these spaces. As the staff rec says, we are the tenant, we will lease, and this term can be negotiated as a part of the lease agreement between the city and LV. The lower the rate simply means the longer period of time that it would take for us to turn back this asset to you all. With regard to a parking master plan and concept, it's a good idea, but I think it would take years to undergo that process. And the concept of the parking master plan should not really be used to delay your acceptance of our unsolicited bid. I am sure the parking master plan will conclude there's a parking demand. I am sure the parking master will conclude that a primary use garage should be constructed here rather than the mixed use building that we're proposing. So it comes down to a policy choice, whether you make it now or a few years from now when the parking master study is done. And that's what is in the best interest of the city. How do you want to rapidly evolve this area and turn it into a neighborhood? That's a question for you all as the elected officials. With regard to the city redevelopment option, this is something I can't understand. I don't know why you all would spend a dime trying to construct this garage when you have an offeror here willing to step up, assume all the construction costs, and in 17 years you reap a bonanza and you won't have spent a dime. So with regard to the presentation, we'll try to go through this. Next slide. So here you see that the property with a star on it is situated in the southwest corner of Collins and 13th Street. Next slide. 50 spaces, hourly only. The revenue is just over $400,000. Next slide. This is, you're right, Commissioner Richardson, Mr. Chairman. In April of this year, Commissioner Samuelian made a motion. The substance of the motion was to include another additional floor of office to see what type of revenue stream it could increase. But you all referred it out of this committee to the commission, really never made it to the commission. So we're back here today hoping that you all would refer it to the commission for its December meeting. Next slide. This is what it would look like with two stories of offices from the northwest looking southwest. Next slide. This is the basic components of the building broken to retail, public parking spaces, and office square footage. Next slide. So we did a walking tour of the block surrounding the Ballet Valet garage. And, you know, the story is sometimes there's a correlation between the number of parking spaces in the area and the economic vitality of the neighborhood. But as you can see here, Collins used to be a thriving retail corridor. Today it's not. And it doesn't matter there's 646 parking spaces in the adjacent garage. They're simply empty storefronts. Next slide. This is just some empty storefronts, 500 Collins. Next slide. 600 block. Next slide. And toward the end, 800 block. Next slide. But there is a bright spot based on Raquel's enormous efforts and her incentive program. CBARE Financial did come to you all in September, and they are now occupying their Urban Outfitter old space. I think this could be the start of things to come, and we just want to be a part of that and add to this and be additive with our office use, because you don't want them to stand out by themselves. Why not start continue to evolve this particular area of the city into a true neighborhood? Next slide. There's 50 spaces today. It'll grow to 169 spaces. That's a very large increase. Next slide. Let me show you how it breaks down with my glasses on. So you start at 169, and then you remove LV spaces, drops to 109. Office parking requirement drops to 56. So 24 hours, 7 days a week, there's 56 spaces. But when the spaces are needed the most, after 5 on the weekday and the weekends, the number jumps to 129, which is more than double the current inventory of spaces in that surface parking lot. Next slide. Now I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Leonard.
Yeah, this is, good morning. This is Leonard Roberts with Location Ventures. Yes, the way we propose this is that the first 2 years, if we were to go under contract, would be to get the entitlements and the permitting, 2 to 3 years to construct. Location Ventures would operate during that time until we actually pay off the debt, which is year 17 turnover. And as Michael mentioned earlier, over $5 million in revenue at that point. Next slide. So currently we have 50 parking spaces. We're proposing by the time that the city takes over, we'll have 169 parking spaces. We anticipate going from zero office space in this building to about 21,000. We are projecting roughly about $85 a square foot. So over, you know, when we look at the total, we're over $2.5 million for the retail use and the commercial. The valuation that we project based on the property appraiser is roughly about $6 million today. If we were to value this based on the income at the end of year 17, we're looking at about roughly $80 million in valuation that becomes all to the city. And the revenue today is roughly, that they mentioned, about $400,000 to $420,000. And by year 17, we're at 5.6. Next slide.
So what you all did in April, we are respectfully requesting to do again today as well. Number one, accept our unsolicited bid. Number two, an advertisement of 60 days pursuant to Florida statute for other bidders to submit their bids and then let the city administration do an analysis of what is in the best interest of the city. And number three, the deal term that we are looking for is a reservation of 60 space to be rented at market rate by Location Ventures. I think that's next slide. And that's it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners.
Thank you. Let me ask a couple of questions. sort of mixed-use building. How is it the fifth and Alton, where there's a parking garage and some retail and Publix and so forth? That's a city garage, but I don't think we own that building. How was that structured? Was that structured as a condo, John? Do you know that, or someone from property management? I hate to put you on the spot, but I'm kind of curious how that.
That is accurate. It is a condo setup. So the city operates and shares in the revenue of the garage, and Edens, which is the owner of the building, is responsible for all maintenance and repairs and capital. And actually, the city also, the parking department, shares in capital investments for the garage portion only.
So does the city own the parking area, or how is that structured legally? Do we know?
I'd have to look into it. It was initially structured via a development agreement, but in terms of the ownership of the condominium units, I'd need to research it.
Yeah. So because the $80 million that you're valuing the asset at in your proposal after 17 years is based on the revenue stream, right? I don't know if it's $70 million or $90 million. I don't know. The reason I'm asking the question is because the two office levels are generating quite a bit of the revenue stream. And I'm just curious in terms of structuring a deal, if we wanted those to be done as condo units so they could be sold after the debt is satisfied and all that revenue. Because I don't know that, you know, the city needs to be in that business. I'm just thinking out loud. But it's something I think we should look at because I don't know that I want the city to own two levels of parking. If I could, you know, if it's a condo, we might be able to sell it when the debt is satisfied and have the revenue stream and do something else with it. The other thing is I'm curious from staff, because there is discussion about, you know, the city could build their own parking facility, but I'm curious if we looked at how much that would cost.
No, not yet.
We don't know. Anyone from parking? Commissioner Rosen Gonzalez, you're recognized.
Thank you very much for your presentation. There's a few things here. Number one, I just saw this right now. I hadn't seen it previously, and I don't believe that anybody who lives in the surrounding neighborhood, if I haven't seen it, would have been noticed to even know that this was being heard at committee. Number two, as you well know, the city just voted down giving away the surface parking lots and deals very similar to this, which would produce $400,000 of revenue on a property that could, whose current valuation is probably around $30 million. Now, I would like to, if you guys are going to do this, before I would take one step and do anything, put this on the MLS. On the MLS, I bet you get $30 million for it, and then you could fix the entire area. We want the real value up front. $400,000 a year just gets enveloped into our general fund. I would like this bid out. I'd actually like to do nothing here, to be honest, because these lots service the Wolfsonian, several other museums in the area. Residents love their surface lots. So, I mean, I'm an absolute no on this, and you need six votes. If it goes right now to the December meeting, I guarantee you it will fail. Because I know that Commissioner Minor is never going to allow something like this to happen with no bid process. Okay? Well, wait. I'm not finished speaking. Number two. Number one, I would, if anything, have the City Commission a parking study to determine actually how many parking spots we need. I don't think that the terms of this agreement favor the residents of Miami Beach in any way, and it hasn't had any resident input. The first thing that you could possibly do is take this to the Flamingo Park Neighborhood Association and see how they feel about this. But you can't build up the entire area. Why don't you guys, can I ask a question? How come you're not buying your own land to do this? Why ours? Why do you want our parking lot? We need those spaces. It's open space. It's already congested over there.
So in response to that, we have a project that we're building right on Washington, and the goal for having this parking available would be to offer approximately 60 parking spaces throughout the days, and then the evenings, 40 parking spaces for our tenants.
Okay. I'm not in favor of this proposal. I would refer it to the Flamingo Park Neighborhood Association. You guys can go and present that over there and see how they feel about it and reach out to the stakeholders, reach out to the Wolfsonian, all the surrounding businesses. And in addition, I would order an appraisal. And I also think that it should go up on the MLS so that we get true value. If this really is what you want to do in selling off more city property, then I would like to get maximum dollar. I would like the dollars up front so that we can use that capital to improve the entire area. $400,000 is not going to do anything for us per year, but I guarantee you if we get $30 million up front, we could do some major capital improvements. All of you know that all of our capital improvements projects are currently underfunded to the tune of 30 to 40%. So I don't think that this is a good business proposal for the city of Miami Beach at this time.
Commissioner Arreola.
Yeah. Where do I begin? So it's funny you say put it on the MLS. I mean, you pick and choose when you want to put things on MLS. Can you just pick numbers? And don't interrupt me. I didn't interrupt you. You throw out numbers, $30 million for a half acre. That's absurd. You can't even get that on Brickell. If you want to put it on MLS to satisfy you, I'm all game. But every time we do that, then you say, well, we're not selling it, so discard it. Because we ran into the same issue with the Barclays. You know, this issue of just status quo and continuing to do what we're doing as a city is going to result in what we have now, which is this entire area is riddled with crime, store vacancies, it's decrepit. Voters have overwhelmingly voted to roll back to 2 a.m. to shut down crime, and we're trying to do things either through the cultural geo bonds or projects like this to revitalize an area that has been slowly on the decline for over two decades. And then so, you know, when people come out and throw bombs like this, it's misleading the public. Currently, we have 50 spots that the city owns. There is a proposal in front of us that would increase that to 169, add retail and add office, and, by the way, in the process, substantially increase the tax revenue coming to the city. Oh, and by the way, per the projections, within 17 years, it reverts back to the city. So we're not selling the city land at all. So again, you know, you can say what you want, but the facts are the facts. The city continues to own the property. We can, in the alternative, we can toss this to the side and we can go on our own to build a parking garage. We can do that. We would stretch our bonding capacity. I've seen how long it takes the city to get anything done. We all have. And maybe in 5 years, we're looking at a proposal, the city's own proposal, to develop the parking garage. Okay. By that time, these gentlemen will be done, and they will have the entire space leased out. If you doubt what I'm saying, just look at how long it's taken us to do a park. Okay, 4 years ago, we got general obligation bonds to build parks. They still haven't even broken ground. Meanwhile, 500 Alton Road, Canopy Park, has been out of the ground and being enjoyed by our residents for the last 6 months. And under 2 years, that developer went and built a park. The city sadly moves really, really slowly. So we can say no to this project. That's fine. That's a prerogative. We don't have the votes. We don't have the votes. But then you have to be accountable to the residents, say we're instead going to do something else because this area is woefully underparked. So we could take this lot and we can build our own parking garage. That could be a prerogative. I think it'll take at least 5 years to break ground because that's how long things take in the city. And in the meantime, retail will continue to struggle. The area will continue to be exactly like it is, dilapidated, crime-infested, or we can try to partner with the private sector to bring redevelopment to the area that will repurpose and reimagine an area that is tired and not getting better, just embracing status quo. So that's why I'm willing to entertain this proposal. And if you don't like the economics, then we negotiate the economics for the betterment of the city. But you just don't say no and then say status quo or mislead the public to say that this is some kind of land giveaway. This proposal, I don't know how much money you're anticipating this project will cost, but I imagine it's $100 million?
It's actually about $25 million.
Okay, 25. Okay. All right. So it's money that we don't have. We'd have to go out and bond. That in and of itself takes a long time. You guys have financing?
Yes, we have a couple of places lined up.
So if this were to be approved, how long would it take you to break ground?
At the end of about 2 years. That includes the permitting and the entitlement process.
Okay. 2 years to break ground?
Yes.
Yeah. That's you, how long it takes. Imagine how long it takes us. We'd have to issue an RFP, then get it bonded. Okay. So I'm in favor to keep this here, continue to discuss it. If we want to, haggle over terms, we could do that, but I think we accept this and get the ball rolling.
And just to point out, while that entitlement process will be going, the city will continue to enjoy the revenue and the parking component of it.
Yeah, the city's not going to lose the revenue stream that we're enjoying now. It's around $400,000, $420,000, something like that, right?
Exactly.
Where did you get the $6 million valuation? Because we heard $30 million this morning. So is it $6 million or $30 million?
The $6 million came from the property appraiser's website.
From where?
The property appraiser's website on the valuations.
Okay. And have there been any recent sales of parcels of that size?
Not in this area that I've noticed.
Because there's probably not a lot available, right?
Right. Yeah, and we did this based on a lease structure and not an actual sales structure.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner, Vice Mayor, did you have your hand up, sir?
Yeah, I see the need for parking in this area. It's, I hear from the parking directors, it's perhaps the area of the city where we have the greatest deficit for parking. In fact, I have an item coming, Mr. Attorney, correct me if I'm wrong, I have an item coming to the City Commission having to do with parking, seeing how we can create more parking, looking at a master plan for parking.
For this Wednesday, yes, sir.
For this Wednesday. I have a question. So this, you project breaking ground on this potentially if this moves forward within 2 years.
Correct.
Okay. During the construction phase, because my concern is we today have a deficit in parking. Then during the construction phase, my concern is we're going to have an even greater deficit in parking. Well, sometimes we have to see the forest through the trees. At the end of the day, we're going to end up with parking that we need. But during the construction phase, how could we supplement that parking? Have you guys explored that?
What we're proposing right now is during that actual entitlement and permitting phase that we will continue to operate it as a 50-car. But then after that, after
the
we break ground,
phase.
Which is roughly from year two, the end of year two to year three, roughly a year to 18 months max. The way we have it proposed currently is that there is no revenue in place necessarily, but we're willing to have a conversation and negotiate that.
Okay. I would need to see how we're going to replace, how you're going to replace this parking during construction. And I also feel that we should be reaching out to the residents of the area. I think we should get their input. I think that's perhaps most important. Let's have some community meetings. Let's reach out to the Flamingo Park Neighborhood Association. Let's reach out to the West Avenue Business Association and other groups just to make sure that there's consensus. I see Mitch here in the audience, and he lives nearby on Collins. Our stakeholders should be involved because at the end of the day, this is their neighborhood, and we want them at the table participating in this. But there is a need for parking. We can't stick our head in the sand about that. We need to be forward-thinking about it. I see this almost, a few months ago, someone threw out there saying that they wanted to see a $25 million public benefit for something. I almost see this as a $25 million public benefit for parking that we would have at the end of 17 years. So I
For now, I feel comfortable moving forward with this, but before this gets back to commission, I think it's important to engage the stakeholders, the neighbors, the neighborhood associations, and the business improvement district. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice Mayor. Parking. There's a parking garage that's catty-corner to this lot. Is that lot heavily? Good morning, Monica. Is that lot? Is it at capacity? What's the status of that lot?
Good morning, Monica Beltran, Parking Director. That garage is at capacity. I want to remind you all of the impact of removing all those parking spaces from Ocean Drive, what it has had to the residents. So that area is very short of parking, and that's Zone 5 for us. Zone 5 residents get to park in that garage. I also like to highlight that lot, those P16, is always busy, and that although you see the revenue at $420,000 for this last year, that revenue, what it doesn't reflect is that I'm going to say at least 20% of those spaces are used by people with disabled placard. So
say that again.
About 20% of the spaces are utilized by people with disabled placards that don't pay for parking. Okay, so that revenue should really be considered at about 40 spaces instead of the 50. That's a situation that we have citywide. So that needs to start being taken into account because there has been an increment in the number of disabled placards because it represents a financial benefit. So, but I could tell you that we have lost a lot of parking, and all I'm going to say right now is that the interest, and I believe somebody asked why the interest of building there, right? You could think back, you know, the company comes and asks for a waiver of parking and then turns around and wants to build a 60 parking in a place where we could also utilize the 60 parking spaces. We do need parking. I believe that the value of parking is not only in money but in support to businesses. It's still tourism. Might not be a party place if that's not what you want, but whether it's art and culture and restaurants, nice restaurants, you want to go somewhere where you can park. And I'm going to go out on a limb again and say that a lot of the storefront on Washington has to do with lack of parking. So I personally don't set out for entertainment where I can't park. And so this is, parking is very important. That lot, I'm going to tell you, I believe is one of our jewels, because it's the largest in that area. And the other smaller ones, you know, you still have to manage. Maybe, you know, the work that goes into managing and the party atmosphere and all that stuff. But, you know, we have a beach, we have restaurants, and we have an established Ocean Drive that you know, we want to increase the quality. But with good restaurants and good entertainment and art and museums, et cetera, you need parking. And so as a parking director, I just very partial to that.
Let me ask you a couple of questions. And I want to recognize Commissioner Arriola, but you mentioned the placards. I know, I guess a year ago or so, we found out that there are a number of, I'll call them illegal placards being used by people that just want to save revenue. So you mentioned the revenue shortfall, but do we know how many people, have we done a study on these placards to know how many are still valid and how many are just scamming the system?
So there was a time in which people were using other people's placards. That's not necessarily true anymore because you can buy one. So they did catch one person that was doing this here in Miami Beach. We believe that there are more. And I could tell
one,
you...
One person that had an invalid or one person that was selling them?
Selling them.
Okay. So selling it could them. Be multiple people then that might have...
I've heard of multiple people that are doing this. If you go to the 46th Street lot, you can find at any time, again, about 20% use of disabled placards.
20% of the total number of spaces.
So it's at one given time you can find 100 disabled parkers.
And the city's policy is we don't charge. You don't have to pay the parking fee if you have a placard. Is that right?
Correct. Well, the state would allow us to charge after 4 hours, which I think would create a disincentive for the employees that are doing this and park 5-6 hours or whatever.
So the state law, there's a state law that preempts and says you cannot, if somebody has a placard, you can't charge parking for up to 4 hours?
Correct. And in municipal parking space. There are certain exceptions, but...
Mr. Chair.
Let me recognize Commissioner Arioli. He has his hand up first, and then I'll get to you, yeah. Vice Mayor. Go ahead.
Yeah, Monica, I don't disagree with you that we need more parking, right? And so... This proposal would increase our parking, so that's a net positive, right? So 169 is more than, what is it, 50? So that's a net positive. You're trying to maybe persuade us to not do this project and build our own parking garage.
I want to give you all the facts, and you're the policymaker. So it's not 169 spaces, because we're going to face the same situation that they're facing in their building. And that is you create parking demand, right, and you under-provide parking supply. So it's not 169 spaces because we are significantly, hopefully, potentially, increasing parking demand for the office spaces and even for the retail, which they're going to apply for a waiver of the retail because people would just walk up. But so... I just want to give you all the facts and whatever's good for the
right.
city.
Yeah. No, we get it. And so you're wearing your parking director hat, and you wear it very well, by the way. But I'm going to put you on the hot seat a little bit because we're trying to make good policy here. And I'm on the same page with you. We need more parking here because we do. It's residents, our tourists, our local businesses need it. We're trying to make the best decision we can, not just on parking, but everything else related to it. And, you know, one of the things that government can do differently than the private sector sometimes is to build parking spaces that, you know, in the private market would rent out for a whole lot more money than what we charge as a municipality, but we're also trying to diversify our tax base, increase the quality of life, et cetera. So, you know, we, in essence, subsidize parking by having lower rates than a private garage would. You know, I look at this area, and I thought those photos highlight very well. We've got vacant storefronts. I think they're going to stay vacant, partly because I think we've done some very proactive legislation to prevent certain types of retail from filling in that, you know, vape shops, marijuana stores, tattoo parlors that would love to pop into there. So I think those stores are going to stay vacant for quite some time because we've restricted the type of retail that can go in there. So that's good policy. However, having vacant storefronts brings other problems like vagrancy, crime, blight, and it chases out other good retail that we would want. So we got to get moving on the redevelopment of this area quickly. Otherwise, it's going to revert back to where it was in the 70s and early 80s. What intrigues me about this project is it's no cost to the city. They'll move quicker and brings office workers to that area, which we really don't have a lot of. And I do think we need, you know, more mixed use in that area. Otherwise, we'll continue to have more T-shirt shops, more budget hotels, and more crappy retail. So, you know, that's my policy hat when I look at this project to try to, you know, have a project coming to that area that is providing more parking. It is net more parking. It may not be as much as 169 spaces, but it is net more. It has retail and it has office, which is something we don't have any of. I'm hopeful that if we get office workers coming to this area, some of those hotels that we have now that create problems will get bought up and maybe converted to office space. The Siebert project is a good example of that. I wish them well. If we can see more of that and this area becomes more mixed use, you know, more daytime activity that supports local restaurants during the day, you know, less bars, less, you know, nuisance retail, I think that's a good thing. So that's why I'm intrigued by this project, okay? So,
yeah, so this initial proposal was good for the city, and it's only gotten better with the addition of the additional office level because of the revenue stream. I wish that I could personally give somebody an asset. In 17 years, they would give me an asset back that is more than 10 times what it's valued at now. And quite frankly, I don't care if the value of the property is $6 million or $10 million because we're not selling the property. We're keeping the property. So it doesn't matter what the value is. It matters what the revenue stream is. But I think there's some additional work that probably needs to be done. I think some questions have been asked about. Monica, with all due respect, I absolutely do not think it's in the best interest of the city to build another parking garage because of the stretch on bonding. That's just my opinion. You know, if I can get somebody to do that for me and I'm not selling the land and I'm getting the asset back, that's increased value. It's really in the no-brainer category. But let's do this. Let's keep it here. I think the vice mayor has raised a good question about what we're going to do with parking in that interim construction. You know, if you make the argument that you're not going to have any disruption, then you'll never get anything done because you know, we need the parking. It's more parking spaces than we have now. I'm also curious about this question on the placards because I thought that we had started to address the issue, but it sounds to me like we still have a problem in this city with people using placards when they don't have the proper qualifications to have one. And that's troubling if you're telling me that in some of our parking lots up to 20% of the spaces are being taken revenue-free. And we think some of those spaces, some of the placards are not valid. That's troubling. And I think we need to look at that issue. Go ahead, Commissioner Rosen Gonzalez, you're recognized.
Okay. As you can see, the evaluation that they're presenting based on $6 million is an evaluation based on leasing. By the way, everybody knows that an assessed value in terms of government is probably sometimes 20 to 30% of what a market value is. Very, very different. So the first thing that I'd like to go out and do is find out what is the real market value. But now that I'm hearing from Monica that, number one, this she called it a jewel. We don't sell our jewels. I don't care if we mask it in a long-term lease, but the point of it is that we could right now take – we could generate the revenue, and we have the money. I know that we do, to build our own parking garage on that site, and we could put – workforce housing, we could put whatever we want there. But this is a process. You don't come in and with an unsolicited bid, we need to do the parking studies, we need to do the traffic studies, I would like to do community input, and I would also like to come together and find out what's best for that spot. Because number one, there is no more land there. And that is why public land is so important. It's not about a few million dollars revenue stream, even if it's $5 million revenue stream. It's about the fact that there is no land. We could never afford to purchase it again, or it would be very hard to purchase anything like that. And maybe we should consider what we should do, because government isn't about making money. It's about providing services and creating situations that help people in workforce housing or affordable housing, whatever it is. We know that we have a housing crisis. So maybe what we need to do is go back to the drawing board and say, okay, we need X amount of spaces at a certain price because, by the way, the people who are parking and using that lot are the people from Blackstone, the working class families that live in the multifamily that live in that area. Once we give that away, they're going to be charging way more per month than the city of Miami Beach would. So this is a jewel. I think that there's a lot of work to be done. I don't know if you would like to. I mean, my motion would be to have them start with neighborhood input here, because what happens after the fact is if you refer this to the commission right now and Flamingo Park finds out, then it's not going to pass. And you guys do want to move forward with something that will pass, correct?
Well,
I think we want to do what's best for the city.
Exactly.
That's what we're trying to do, what's best for the residents. the curiosity of this, the irony of it is Commissioner Samuelin was strongly supportive of this, as he was of the Lincoln Lane project. His only objection was not to do both at the same time, go forward with one. Sad. But, you know, I would love to hear your ideas for how we're going to fix this area, Commissioner Rosa Gonzalez, because, you know, every time me in particular, but I know Commissioner Richardson, work really hard on trying to come up with fresh ideas, you just sabotage them at the 11th hour. So I'd like you to go on record with the residents on what you're going to do with this area to revitalize it, because right now it's crime infested, the businesses are suffering, residents don't go there. So I'd love to hear how you're going to fix this.
Right now?
At any time, because all you do is shoot down ideas and throw bombs, but you don't never come up with an actual proposal to fix things and make things better.
Well, we've added an additional 17 police officers right now. We have several plans in the making, capital improvements in the entire area.
Which you did not lead on any of those.
Okay, so let's do
this.
Wait a minute.
Because he's been attacking me this entire time. I'm so sorry that the residents don't agree with you. I'm really sorry.
All right, we're not.
65% of them agreed with me on the cultural bond.
Yeah.
Again, all mine. Nothing to do with you.
Yes, because we didn't go into what an egregious tax it's going
Guys,
to be. And I did
am
that for
not
the arts
doing the meeting
but if I
like
would have
this,
talked to everybody about how
Mr.
egregious
Rosa
the
Gonzalez,
taxes were on it, it wouldn't. It would
I am
not.
I'm not
have passed
running the meeting like this. You know, we do it orderly, and everybody gets to speak.
Well, then why don't you just,
Commissioner? We're not doing the meeting that way. I recognize everybody. We have an orderly meeting. Now, if you'd like to speak, I will recognize you.
Okay. I think that the neighborhood institutions, the neighborhood associations, and Commissioner Fernandez feels similarly, even though he's not voting on this right now, should be able to weigh in on this. And then you will have a good gauge of whether this will actually pass or not. Because what happens is our staff is dedicating itself to a lot of initiatives, and then they don't pass at the commission level. So let's speak with all the stakeholders. Let's get buy-in so that if you do have a project that makes sense for the city of Miami Beach, it actually passes. Because what we do right now is we go through all of these motions and then they fail. And then our staff, instead of trying to focus on what they can do, which is keep the city clean and safe, are running around for the developers all the time. And that's not the way that we should be running things. So why don't we send it to the neighborhood associations, get community input on what they would like to see in that space, and then from there, you can figure out what we're going to do with it.
Mr. Chair.
Okay. Go ahead, Vice Mayor.
Thank you. I'm going to just reiterate what I mentioned earlier about neighborhood input, because I do think that's important. I think one of the things that Commissioner Minor actually mentions a lot, especially when we speak about, for example, Loomis Park and Ocean Drive, how many mid-beach families don't go to Loomis Park or Ocean Drive, or North Beach families don't. And so when we go out to the neighborhood, I would like us to go out to the city, to all of our residents, and see how they feel about this. I think it's important to prioritize Flamingo Park, residents on Collins Avenue and Ocean Drive, and the businesses from Washington Avenue. But I think we represent the entire city, and this lot belongs to all the residents of the city of Miami Beach. And I would like to hear from, you know, the greater community, would they come to this part of the city? Would they patronize the businesses there, and would they support this economy there if parking existed there? Maybe they wouldn't, or maybe they would. But I would like to know that when we go out to the community, let's broaden the outreach a little bit more. And, Mr. Chair, to your line of questioning about the handicap placards, Monica and I have had many of conversations about that topic. And Mr. Chair, I don't know if you'd like to partner in working on legislation about beyond the 4 hours and establishing a rate, just a token rate, if you're not registered with the city. Because if we require them to register with the city, we can ask to see the prescription from the doctor. And we can then audit that and just make sure that these are not falsified, fake placards that have been put forward. And I would like, since you express an interest in the topic, if you'd like to partner on it, I'd be happy to work with you.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's get to a sunshine meeting so we can talk about it. And I'm troubled that there's the possibility that
So, guys, we have to decide what we want to do, because this actually there's been an opportunity for a lot of people to weigh in on this, because it's been before this committee for, I think, more than 6 months now. And so the item has been here, it's been improved, it's been changed, and so forth. And, you know, we can either leave it here or we can move it to the commission if the votes are here to do that. But the concern is that you can get it there and you may or may not have the votes. And so you have to tell me if you think that there's some additional work you want to do and we leave it here, or would you like to see it moved out if that's the will of this committee? Go ahead, guys.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. So what I would like is to move it out of committee today. When we get to commission, it would take four votes in order for you all to agree for the whole commission to advertise for and to have a – yes, Rafael?
No, I was just anticipating a question from Commissioner Rosen-Gonzalez.
So, and we will do the neighbor outreach, whether you all want to refer to, like, January commission to give us enough time to do the neighbor outreach that's described. Like, we're not in the boundaries of Flamingo Park, but we're happy to go ahead and, you know, make a presentation to that association. We've made a presentation to Ocean Drive Association. We've made a presentation to Washington Avenue BID. We can go back there. The Alameca apartment buildings to our north, we can certainly do outreach to them. There's a multifamily condo to our east. We can do outreach to them. And we can do all of that by the January City Commission meeting.
Yeah, that's what I thought. You've already done all that outreach.
Yeah, well,
you've already done it, but you can do it again. Commissioner Arriola, so if you'll move it, then I will second it. We'll move it out of committee. We'll put it on the January Commission agenda for discussion there. In the interim, I would urge you to remind everybody, the seven elected officials, of your community outreach that you have already done, and go out and do it again. And the other thing is, I would like you to, and we can do this, you know, we can schedule a meeting. I'm very curious about the structure of it, whether or not those office space, if it moves forward, would be condo units. The value of the property is not relevant to the discussion on whether we do or do the revenue stream is, because we're going to end up with the asset back. This is not a land sale. Right. This is the asset is going to stay within the family of the city of Miami Beach. So, all right. Well, the item has been moved and it's seconded, and it will move to commission in January, and we'll have that discussion. And guys, you've got some work to do before then. I think we're also recommending that it. Previously, we had made a recommendation that the commission send, if we do anything, it goes out for 60 days so that others can have an opportunity to bid on it, and they'll tell us if they've got something better.
Mr. Chair, yeah, so the motion would be to accept the unsolicited proposal for the purpose of then the city issuing a request for alternative proposals in accordance with the statute, and you're suggesting a 60-day period, but that would be the motion would be to recommend that the commission accept the proposal and commence the procurement process.
No, we're not... Because I think there's some additional work that has to be done. What this committee is doing is moving it out back to the commission for consideration. So we're not making a favorable or an unfavorable.
Okay.
We're moving it back to the commission so that the commission can make that decision. So we have vetted it. We have asked for improvements to be made. We've asked for changes to be made. And so... we are recommending that the proposal that is before this committee now be put before the finance committee.
Without a recommendation necessarily to...
Because there's some additional work that still needs to be done. And besides, I don't think it matters because we're recommending that it go to the commission and it be put out, that we take this unsolicited proposal and put it out for... other offers to be put forth.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Sorry. All right, we're going to close this item, and I had a 10:30. I'm just a little bit behind schedule. Marcia, We're going to talk about, I think, the Goodwood proposal, right? That was at 10:30.
Here we are.
You're recognized. Go ahead. Good morning.
Good morning, Commissioner. Good morning, Commissioners. On Zoom, we have representatives from the Goodwood Festival of Speed team. I do not want to make presentation for them, so I want to make sure that, you know, we go to them first.
Let's do that. Are they with us, and can we bring them in? And I think I had told them to plan on a 10-minute block of time for a presentation. I think some of us have met with them previously. So,
Commissioner Richardson, I also wanted to let you know that Jose Soto Longo is here from the GMCVB, and Robert Goodman is here to speak on their behalf as well.
It's not a public hearing, but once we have the presentation, I will recognize them for comment.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Great. Thank you. Thank you very much. I wonder if somebody could be kind enough to bring up the first slide for me. Great. Thank you so much for seeing us today and for this opportunity. My name is Tim Bully. I'm the International Director for Goodwood. Could I have the next slide, please? Established by the current Duke of Richmond at Goodwood House in the south of England 30 years ago, the Goodwood Festival of Speed is the largest celebration of motorsport, automotive design and car culture in the world, with over 500 of the world's most important cars on display and running on the track. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the greatest collection of cars in the world. Appearances by strict invitation only. The car gets the invite, not the owner, and it has to be the car. So it's the 1955 Mercedes-Benz that Stirling Moss won the Mille Miglia in, or Ayrton Senna's first F1 championship-winning car. The festival tells the story of the past, present, and future of automotive. So, for example, this year we had Edison's first electric car of 1908, and at the other end of the spectrum, the fastest car at the event was the McMurtry electric prototype. Each year we celebrate a theme, an anniversary or a moment in time which makes no festival the same as the other. It includes a world-famous concourse and one of the most renowned auctions of historic vehicles in the world. And be under no illusion, these cars are some of the world's most valuable assets. The owners of the cars are the world's financiers, entrepreneurs, and in many cases, rock stars and actors that you would recognise, a highly valuable inbound audience. And with over 30 car manufacturers exhibiting, Festival of Speed is also the biggest motor show in the world. At the heart of the festival is Futureland. An arena that is an important showcase for the world's leaders in technology, mobility, connected cities, software, and design. Driven by a desire from our car manufacturer, tech, and sponsor clients to replicate this successful formula, we have an ambition to take the event around the world. We have, to date, explored several options in the United States, but the city of Miami Beach ticks all the boxes. It's a world-leading, glamorous location that our owners, clients, and customers will want to travel to. It's close proximity to South America and, very importantly, to Florida technology. Miami is also the US city with the second largest sales of high-performance vehicles in the United States, the third being just up the road at Fort Lauderdale. Having been in discussions for 2 years, our proposal is to bring the event with all its key components to Miami Beach on the Friday to Sunday over the third weekend in March 2024. The proposed event site will run from 5th Street to 14th and will encompass Ocean Drive, Loomis Park and the Beach Hard Pack with additional activity like the beautiful Concours d'Elegance in Collins Park. The cars will run along Ocean Drive and use sections of the Serpentine, which we've been planning collaboratively with the Parks Authority and emergency services to ensure that this is done appropriately and with full consideration to safety infrastructure. We'll require a minimum 3-week build and 2-week break, that during this time we will endeavour to work collaboratively to avoid disruption. I have the next slide, please. This represents an opportunity for the city of Miami Beach to become a pioneering international partner of a truly unique event that has enjoyed unrivaled success in the UK for over 30 years. As the only event of its kind in the world, it'll drive visits to Miami Beach from all over the globe, provide a stunning spectacle for residents, and will deliver a highly valuable global business audience. At the core of this proposition are six pillars that will provide benefit to the city of Miami Beach. The event is a platform to drive business sector growth and boost long-term GDP, positioning Miami Beach as a global pioneer, particularly around technology and future mobility as a solution to climate change issues, using the palette of the world's most glamorous cars and drivers against the beauty of Ocean Drive's famous Art Deco strip and its beach. It'll showcase Miami Beach as an aspirational destination brand. It'll create long-term social impact through volunteering and education programs, leading on design, technology, and engineering. And we believe that we'll bring around 1,000 jobs to the local economy. This global mass entertainment family event will be a direct driver of tourism, attracting significant numbers of non-local spectators from target markets and VIP attendees staying for more days, all contributing to long-term GDP growth. At the next slide, please. By curating the most important collection of cars, car culture and design, we'll tell a compelling story in order to put the context around a vision of the future, representing an exciting opportunity to showcase the future of mobility and automotive technology in a 21st century global city. And alongside this, we will bring together the leaders of the world's car manufacturer and technology companies for Nucleus, a Davos-level invitation-only congress to debate the opportunities associated with green energy to help the world reach its global emissions targets, positioning the city of Miami Beach as a global climate change pioneer. The next slide, please. And these live events experiences will enable the creation of a significant amount of media content, using the backdrop of Ocean Drive and South Beach as the canvas, showcasing the city of Miami Beach to an international TV and digital audience at scale. Next slide, please.
Let's start wrapping it up, please.
Festival of Speed is a family event. Kids go under 16 go free, and through the unique experiences and exceptional storytelling, we'll engage young people in the future of design, engineering, and technology in an exciting way. We will work with you to engage with schools and universities to showcase education programs that we can bring to life at the festival, placing students' achievements on the world stage. There are also opportunities for young people to volunteer to be part of the operations of the event, learning skills to enhance their employment opportunities. And then there are the direct employment opportunities for the local workforce associated with delivering an event of this scale. Next slide, please. There are significant economic impacts associated with this event, and we've worked with independent host city agents, the sports consultancy, to calculate the economic impact. 121,000 bed lights worth around £18 million per year, $27 million in a non-accommodation spend, in addition to the $40 million that we will be spending to put the event on in the local economy. Next slide, please. So to conclude, our proposal here is to deliver you an end-to-end solution, taking care of the entire festival show and logistics. The principles of that agreement are that Goodwood invests in the turnkey delivery of the event. City of Miami Beach provides the event site and agreed city-funded services. The City of Miami Beach facilitates the contribution of a cash investment to cover other city items required for the event, for example, waste management, security, etc. The city provides a clean zone to prevent ambush marketing. At our risk, Goodwood underwrites the event costs, currently estimated in excess of $45 million per annum, and we fund the upfront working capital. Goodwood commercializes the event revenues, but like most events of this scale, we're forecasting a loss in the early years, which we will again underwrite. As a result, we require a long-term commitment from the city of a 5+5-year agreement. The city of Miami Beach then benefits from significant direct and indirect economic impacts, including heads in beds, business investment in the local economy, media and broadcast, and social and educational. The event significantly enhances Miami Beach live programming, and all of this will be executed in a highly collaborative way. And above all, you know, it'll be a really fun weekend. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. And Vice Mayor, this is your item, so let me recognize you first, and then I'll go back to Marcia.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman, and I want to thank the Goodwood representative for that presentation. I think it's so exciting to have this before us. They represent motoring heritage, and I think it will elevate our image, our brand, during this very important time of the year, given the fact that they produce three of the world's largest motoring and motorsports events, and having the opportunity to have them come to Miami Beach is certainly very exciting. And it's not just them and the festival, it's their audience, an elevated audience of global leaders, of business leaders, of influencers, and figures from the world of motorsports. And so I think it is a very exciting opportunity to enhance our brand as a dynamic destination. And not only that, but expanding our presence worldwide. I think it's a great win-win to create a controlled environment for public safety, not just on Ocean Drive or Collins Avenue or Olive South Beach. That this would activate, but very importantly, everything we've asked for, creating a controlled environment on Ocean Drive and bringing consumers into the area who will be filling hotel rooms and supporting the businesses and the nightlife there as well. So it certainly is very exciting, and I see that we have Beverly, our Queen of Education, in the audience, and they too have also committed to working with our students and our educational institutions. So overall, it is very exciting, and at the right time, Mr. Chair, I would like to speak about how we can put forward a proposal for the administration to work on an agreement with them. But with that, I want to turn it over back to Marcia so she can take it from here. Thank you,
Go
Mr.
Ahead,
Chair.
Marcia.
Thank you, Commissioners. In 2021, you asked the administration to come up with some alternative programming in March. And last year, we produced our own show, and for next year, we've aggressively targeted producers to come to do their shows in March of 23. But we partnered with the GMCVB to find out what else is out there. What large-scale event could we entice to come to Miami Beach, specifically South Beach, in the month of March? And the GMCVB and Miami-Dade County brought us Goodwood and connected us with Goodwood. As Tim said, you know, their footprint, and as Vice Mayor Fernandez said, their footprint is significant. Their anticipated footprint encompasses Ocean Drive, Loomis Park, the Swale, and the Hard Pack from 5th to 15th, and includes Collins Park because that's where the Concours d'Elegance is going to be. They anticipate that just their partners and their vendors will take up the hotel rooms on Ocean Drive. They truly can change what our march will look like. I think I don't want to take the Vice Mayor's words, but it really will be the audience that we're looking for. Some combination of, you know, their partners and their visitors. It is a very family-friendly event. Tim will tell you that the majority of motorsport events don't have, you know, the number of women that this event has. It is 50-50 men and women because really it is an event. It's a place to see and a place to be seen. And I think that's exactly what we're looking for March. And so with that,
Thank you, Marcia. So it's my understanding that we're looking at the third weekend in March. Is that correct?
Commissioner, we've asked them to look at that weekend. They've agreed that that's a weekend that they will come. They've also asked us to, in the agreement that they're looking for, it will basically have some language that will say whatever weekend we ask them to come in March. So if in the future the moon and the stars change it to the second weekend, then we will work with them to push to those dates versus the third weekend. But right now what we're looking for is, I think it's in 24, it'll be March 19th, so 20 and 2021. So it'll be that third weekend.
And has the administration started looking at this question of the time on the build out, because there's a lot going on in March? Have you all started thinking about how that can all be coordinated, because there'll be other events on other weekends? You're the master of this, Marcia. I know you can do it, right?
I'm looking for some backup from Lisette. Have we looked at the specifics? No, we understand. And actually this last meeting with Goodwood was a little more specific. Their heaviest build out is going to be on the sand, because that's where they're going to put Future Lab. I think they kind of mentioned a little bit their educational component. It is a very large event that will take place as part of their overall event. It's, imagine a venue the size of the Design Miami tent, or even probably a little larger, but of that scale, which will include, Tim, I need your help here, which will include all of the future endeavors of mobility. And so that is expected to be on the sand, on the hard pack,
yeah.
And that is the largest and probably the most time-consuming of their build-out. And then they, and again, I don't want to speak for them, but they can stage the rest. So will it cause a little pain to a lot of us and the events? It may.
All right. Mr. Goodman, I know you're here and wanted to speak, so let me recognize you for 2 minutes. Come on up. Who else here that wants to speak on the issue? Mr. Novak, would you like to speak? Go ahead.
Thank you, David. Somehow along the way, people think I'm an event guru. So these folks sought me out. They were recommended to meet with me. I met with them for 2 hours.
Just so we can put it on the record, are you a paid lobbyist for them?
No, sir.
Okay. You're here as a citizen or as a private.
Exactly.
Thank you.
I met with them for 2 hours one day, followed up. We met at the golf club the second day for another 2 hours. I was so impressed, and I told them, they told me that they'd be making the presentation. I told them I'd like to be here and speak about it. Ironically, 20 years ago, I was here at this dais, and the vote to bring Art Basel Miami Beach here, actually, they needed permanent dates, and the vote was 4-3. It was narrow. Mayor Kasdan was the mayor then. It's unbelievable that 20 years have gone by, and this is our 20th anniversary, and here I am again saying this is a transformative event. This is something that will change Miami Beach. I'm impressed. I think it's at the level of an Art Basel Miami Beach from a different sector, where art, these are cars. It's my understanding that the second largest collecting entity in the world are cars, and art is number one. I wanted to mention that this event will need so much local talent, mm-hmm. as Art Basel to make it happen. I met with them, and there's a laundry list of things they have to put in place, sponsors, site design, and on and on and on. So I would encourage you and tell you to move quickly, to bring it to the commission, invite them, and then let your team, your staff, and they work on the many, many details. I do want to just mention that I understand that there's a music event that you're contemplating, and I would be hopeful that you would not, you would have this event work with them, but yes, not have that event tie their hands in any way. They're going to need build-out time, and so on and so forth. Anyway, that's my 2 cents. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Mr. Bobby. Go ahead, sir. Tell us your name and for the record.
Jose Sotolongo, Director of Sports and Entertainment Tourism at the Greater Miami Convention and Visitors Bureau. Thank you very much for your time. We have been involved with this with the Goodwood Festival of Speed from the beginning. It is for us, it was an event that we wanted to bring that would highlight the culture of the future of transportation. And it's not just automobiles. I don't know if Tim went into it in his presentation, but it's also the future of transportation as far as boats and as far as anything going into the future that is not fossil fuel based. So that with Tim said about the city of Miami Beach being a leader in the future of what mobility is going to be and what the environment is, we are very excited about that. The fact that they have gone ahead and said they're going to be involved with the educational aspect of it with our kids in the future is also very exciting for us. But what really tickled my fancy, our fancy, is the fact that the amount of hotel room nights that this is going to provide, and it's going to be the amount of not just the hotel room nights, but of the employment opportunities for our local residents, that we are completely behind it. We're in favor of it, and we will partner with the city in moving this event forward.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead, Mitch. Thank you. Morning.
Good morning, everyone. Mitch Novick. I reside in the Entertainment District. Perhaps this could be a transformative event, like Art Basel, which is, again, in our crosshairs. The concern I have is the month this would take place, third week in March. This year, the third week in March, I watched Juanes perform at an event which cost $2.5 million, I believe, for taxpayers for a series of events. And then I was subject or witnessed what was a shooting, which people were hit, stampedes ensued. And until we shake our spring break image, which, of course, is throughout the month of March, to offer a clean and safe experience to both visitors and residents and business owners, I would table this discussion until such a time. Thank you.
Thank you. And Mitch, I just wanted to personally thank you for putting your name forward. It's tough to be a public servant, and it's tough to even put your name forward. So thank you for putting your name forward.
I had a lot of fun with it. Thank you.
Good. Thank you. Well, the good news is I don't think that this – I'm going to recognize you in just a minute. I don't think that this particular event is targeting the spring break crowd, right?
Huh.
Okay. I just want to make sure. Commissioner Rosa Gonzalez, you're recognized. Go ahead.
I'm 100% supportive of this event. I know that we need programming like this. My only advice or what I would tell the administration is that when we spoke to the police, you know, we have all these events that we didn't have before, and so they have to work these events, and they're exhausted from the event. So how can we get police officers from throughout Miami-Dade County to come in at a lower price and work these events so that we don't exhaust our police officers that have to work these events? And I think that's really the fix. The fix needs to be that, you know, we need these police officers from outside. And I heard that message loud and clear from our police department. So hopefully, as we do these events, nothing exists in a vacuum. Let's get this event done, but also see if we can somehow change the policy that we currently have regarding these police officers working outside of Miami Beach. I think that's super important so that our officers are not working constant shifts in March. You already know what March is like. It's crazy.
So I don't want to put words in your mouth. Are you moving the item? Okay.
You move the item.
I will second it. And so I think what you said, you're supportive. And so we'll move it back to the commission with a favorable recommendation. I'll recognize you in just a second. We'll move it back to the commission with a favorable 3-0 favorable recommendation that the administration begin negotiations. I want to be very clear that I'm supportive of this for the third weekend in March. And so if it comes back and that's not part of the agreement, then you're not going to have my support unless you can convince me that you. The other thing is we need to make sure there's this proper coordination with all the other things that we have going on so that
the folks at Goodwood, if we move forward with this, have the time that they need to do the build out, but also be respectful that there'll be other things going on in the month. And Marcia, you're very good at making all that magic, so you'll do it. Let me get to the vice mayor first, because he had his hand up first. Go ahead, vice mayor.
Yes, and thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think one of the exciting things about this, and by the way, Madam Manager, welcome. It's good to see you here again. One of the exciting things about this is that it's also transforming the day part of this period of time. We're not talking about necessarily a nighttime event. This is a daytime activation.
It is an all-day affair.
An all-day,
so
right. We're activating different
day parts. If we mirror what happened at Goodwood, it is a morning start, and it runs all day, and there's activities that go through till sundown, and then after sundown, there'll be different types of activities. But it is an all-day event, and as I said earlier, it's for everyone. So it's very family-friendly.
Very inclusive.
And it's inclusive to everyone.
Very exciting.
Okay. I want to, Commissioner Rosa Gonzalez, go ahead, because I want to close the item out and move on. Go ahead.
I know that we also had the North, what is it called, the North Sea Music Festival, which I would also like to see happen. So we have to work with both of them and make sure that we have the space for both.
Yeah, that's part of that coordination that I was talking about.
Yeah,
we need to make sure that, because we got a lot of things going on in March on the weekends, and so that's just going to be a master job in coordination. But Marcia, you're very good at this, so you know
it is logistically challenging.
Yeah,
and we really do need to work if we're going to have the North Sea Music Festival and Goodwood that same month. I cannot say that how important it is to go out and recruit police to work these events. I know we already have extra police during that month anyway.
Commissioner, I would, if you want to bring an item to the commission, because I think it's a really good point, and I'm curious about this. I think I'd like to hear more about this, but I've actually heard that our police officers want a certain amount of overtime, and they don't want us bringing in outside. But I would be curious to find out what, if our police really want to bring in forces from other jurisdictions, because I'm not sure that's what they want. But do you want to bring an item
December? Can't complain that they're exhausted and they're not allowed for reinforcements. So something has to give there, because we can't keep adding events and then have these guys on the Alpha Bravo schedule that they're on and expect them to staff all of these events. Maybe park rangers can do the job that the police are doing, and that's another suggestion. But I heard it loud and clear from the police union recently that they said that they are tired, and I'm just mentioning it.
Okay, you want to put an item on for the December agenda?
Sure, I will put an item on the December agenda about this, because I strongly believe that we should be able to have off-duty police officers cheaply everywhere in the city.
Okay, I want to close this item because I've got still a lot of things ahead of me, and we've got about 1 hour left, and I want to get all the items left. So I want to call up item number 6, the education question. So thank you, Marcia. Thank you, Mr. Hoover. Thank you, everybody,
thank
for
you.
Coming.
Thank you very much.
I think we have 11:30, don't we? Yeah. I got to get them in. Who's got this item from the staff? Wait just a minute.
I've got it.
Go ahead, John. Tee this up for us.
Okay. I can just we thought this would initially be a discussion item, but we were able to put together a short memo. So I'll just quickly summarize it, I think, just to help with the discussion here. So at the last meeting, we were asked to go ahead and meet with the QEC, Quality Education Committee. We did that on October 10th. And subsequently, I had a great discussion with QEC member Beverly Heller on October 18th as well. Where we've landed on this item is really four things. The first is that this division has now been recently transitioned back to the Office of Management and Budget, which it was part of for many years prior as part of the FY23 budget process, so starting in October 1st. This reorganization, we feel, will help provide additional administrative and budgetary support on an ongoing basis. And also, since this is a dynamic area, which has been growing at a rapid rate in the last few years, that they could, you know, having the allocator resources in the organization, keeping an eye on it, hopefully that will help keep up with whatever staffing needs or anything that might be needed. But at this point in time, we don't feel that we want to recommend creating a standalone department. So that's the first item. The second is that we did want to make some changes to the title of the division and to the title of the division director to help reflect the focus on education, which has taken place recently. So the title of the division will be changed to Education and Performance Initiatives. The title of the division director will be changed to Chief Education Officer. And when we make that change, that should happen shortly, and that will be reflected in a salary ordinance that we do. We try to batch up all of these changes and do it, you know, usually on an annual basis. So that would be reflected there eventually. We took the third thing. We took a real close look at the staffing of the division. Just since 2019, for example, 25 new programs have been implemented. So we want to make sure that we're providing the right number of staff to help support it, because it is growing dynamically, as I mentioned before. In 2019, we had two full-time positions. One of them was related to training. That training has been moved over to the HR department. So if we're going to do apples to apples, it's really one full-time position, where now we have four. So we have added three additional positions there to help free up the chief education officer's time so that time can be focused primarily on educational items. Obviously, as the head of the division, that position is always going to have to do some non-education work. But I think what we were trying to look at is if we could keep that to at least 80% education focus as a minimum, that would be a good mix. And we think that's kind of where we are now. But again, we need to closely monitor and keep up with any changes that could be coming up in the near future. The fourth thing, the last thing, is that we have these great programs. We have residents who may or may not be aware of them. We have prospective residents who oftentimes make decisions about where they're going to live regarding, you know, what education or type of schools and programs are available in that community. And so we definitely want to make a strong effort to update the website to make sure that it's very easy for anyone who's, you know, thinking about moving to Miami Beach or who's already here to be able to find all the great programs that this community is supporting. So those were the four things that we highlighted in the memo. And
Thank you. And Madam Manager, you're participating in that recommendation as well?
Yes, sir. It's my name on the memo.
Okay.
I think that this is a really good comprehensive approach to the request that was made by the committee, and consistent with where we were headed and the direction that we were headed in. So I feel really comfortable. I thank John for coming up with the different points and describing the different points for you. I am expecting the chief education officer, who serves in another capacity as well and is leading some organizational development initiatives for us, and I have an expectation that will continue as well. But I think that positioning the position under the auspices of our Office of Management and Budget provides it with the support, the appropriate support that it needs.
Okay. Go ahead. Let me hear from them, and then I'll recognize you, okay?
Well, this is my item, and I believe that I should be able to introduce
You're recognized.
My item.
Go ahead.
I would have let you introduce
sure.
our item.
Go ahead.
Thank you, whoever said that. You're getting a CEO, not a chief education officer. I mean, chief executive officer. You're getting, Beverly, you're getting what you wished. It's freeing up. You're getting a chief education officer. They're freeing up time for her. I think that this is a pretty good compromise overall, to have somebody, you know, with this title dedicated to education. You're getting additional resources. And I think the administration is also... I think they did a good job here. If you see that you're not getting the amount of support that you guys need with all these education initiatives, we can shift it. But this is a serious restructuring of the department. How do you feel?
Go ahead, Beverly. You're recognized.
Thank you. And I really feel I'm in a friendly group, because I recognize all of you. I've spoken to you, and you know how much I care about education. having a department or having a chief financial person, educational officer, both of them are wonderful offers, really. The thing that bothers me is when it was said that it would take up 80%, okay? I think that the person or department should be focused on education, not 80% education and maybe bicycling and all this other kind of stuff. I want it to be on education. And it's because, and I really wrote a whole reason why. So if you don't mind, I'm going to say it. This issue, first of all, I want you to know, I've been in education in Miami Beach for over half a century, and I've never spoken in front of a commission before, okay? And the reason I'm doing it is because, to me, to have a department, mostly a department, but I will go for a chief person if that's their job and it's through an ordinance, so that's something that can't be changed easily, and that it shows how important. And I really, I've written such a wonderful thing, but I'm speaking because I think John, I really had a great meeting with John, and I think he's doing his best. I think Alina's doing her best. But it's not for me the best. The best is that we have something that just does education, a person or a department. And people, 75% of the voters on Miami Beach voted to have education be a priority. They thought it was something important. And we have initiatives. I thought it was only 20, but John said it was 25. Whatever it is, that's a lot of initiatives for somebody to look over and only have 80% of their time doing that. I don't think that's correct. If we're going to show that we really value our education, we understand how it brings in people to the community because they know how good our education is, how our values of our property goes up because people come to Miami Beach for the schools, not just for the business, but when you come with a business, you want a good school for your family. I think that we should show that we value and understand the importance and give it our full, not 80%, but our full 100% with a department or a person who is dedicated to education. I thought about it, and I really thought that that
would be... So, Beverly, let me say that what we're doing in this city is probably more than any city in the state of Florida.
Correct. We're wonderful.
And we have prioritized education. So the fact that somebody is dedicating 80% of their time is 80% more. I don't know of any other city that has this department. Do you? Does anybody else have this type of structure where we support a public education? I mean, our tax dollars, you know, we don't even keep all of our tax dollars, school taxes. You know, they get shifted around. They get sent to Tallahassee. And so what gets sent back is less than what we collect. So I don't know of any other city that's doing more than what we're doing.
You are absolutely right. We are wonderful. We are the only city in the whole United States that offers an IB program. And we offer full-time early childhood programs for the kids on our beach. And we offer after-school programs. And we offer AP classes and dual enrollment classes. We offer so much. Somebody should be overseeing it. It's costing us lots of money. It's taking a lot of initiatives. It shouldn't be going to all different places and just, you know, as it's coming in. It should be, we should be overseeing it. There should be somebody who has their hand on the whole thing.
Someone spending 80% of their time. Listen, we have all sorts of departments and divisions in the city, and they have multiple responsibilities. So, Julie, I want to recognize you. Yeah, go ahead.
Please. Hi, Julie Basner. I'm chair of the Committee for Quality Education. By the way, you did great. I can't believe this is your first time addressing the committee. I want to first thank John for entertaining. Well, thank you for taking this on, Commissioner. And I just want to say that I appreciate the process. I appreciate the opportunity to for all of us at QEC to express our thoughts and ideas about this. Obviously, we were hoping for a standalone department, but we are extremely amenable to a division or the fact that this is going to be hopefully going to be reorganized. And the only thing that I want to just say is that things are rapidly changing for the better, it seems. And so I just hope that we can keep an open sort of keep the door open. And frankly, if, you know, there are circumstances that change that we, you know, possibly reconsider a standalone, I'm really comfortable with 80%, and I'm hopeful that this just kind of gives us, you know, more fuel for the momentum that we currently have.
Thank you. And I also,
just so quickly, I am glad that it's through an ordinance. That to me says that you do support that having this position for a chief financial is through an ordinance, and that at least will show that it validates what we're saying.
As I said,
that's important.
I think we do more than any other. Let me put on the record one other thing that I don't know that people have considered, because I value our employees. By changing this to a department, that could trigger a change in the title of the position. Mm-hmm. And we have a very valued member of our staff who could possibly lose her job. Mm-hmm. Because if we were to advertise the job and it were to be a department head, then we might hire somebody else, and the person that's in the position now could lose her job. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's what you want.
Never.
And so I need to put that on the record, that having that change could trigger some other things, mm-hmm. and a valued member of our staff might not be with us. So, and I think, as you said, Commissioner Rosen-Gonzalez, this is a good compromise. Let's see. Let's revisit it in a year. Let's see where we're at. And I think everybody in this community knows how much we value public education and all sorts of private education and how much we support it. We're supporting, this city supports our educational systems in excess of $2 million a year, recurring.
And Mr. Chair, I just want to echo your comments, and to Julian and Beverly on the record state our commitment to continuing to evaluate this. I think the recommendation caught us off guard, quite frankly, and completely outside of our budgetary process. There were requests for enhancements on behalf of multiple departments. There isn't a single department director that you would talk to that won't tell you that they have needs. And so it's always a balancing act. And I think that the person who currently runs the programs will tell you that she has our full support and has had our full support and will continue to have our support, and we will certainly commit to evaluating the workload and trying to understand the other commitments that I expect her to continue to do, and depending on that, we would come back with a budget recommendation in the future.
Thank you. And I know we also just put another $275,000, which I think your committee just heard and has sent a recommendation, which I think we're going to hear on Wednesday, and
yes,
hopefully we'll get that recommendation ratified. So go ahead, Commissioner Rosen-Gonzalez.
So the motion is to move this to the full commission?
Yes.
So the
ordinance changes? Because I heard John say.
There are no ordinance changes per se. I mean, this is an administrative action that actually took place as the setting of the budget. So this is already established in terms of the organization. John, correct me if I'm wrong in terms of the ordinance.
Yeah, just a clarification on the ordinance. What happens is we create these different types of positions with different names or titles.
Yeah.
We try to memorialize them in an ordinance. It's just that we try to batch them up. So we try not to take at least three or four or five of them at a time. So we recently did that. So it would probably be more like, 6 to 12 months before we would do it again. But the intent would be that the next time it gets updated, this would definitely be in there.
So I think the motion, Commissioner, is to accept the recommendations of the administration. And if you would like to memorialize this title change sooner than the next batch, I would be supportive of that. It doesn't matter to me that we wait and
batch it with something else. Is there any reason why we can't just go ahead and do it?
I'm going to check with the city attorney after we complete this meeting. We are actually coming back with the unclassified pay ordinance on Wednesday for first reading, and there may be an opportunity to do it then.
Okay. Yes, so we are coming back for the unclassified salary ordinance with some amendments, and we won't have time to make it for first reading, but we could incorporate the position title for second reading.
Mr. Chair?
Okay, so do we need to do anything for first? Let's do this, Commissioner Rosa Gonzalez. If you're accepting, let's move it out of the committee with the recommendation that we accept the recommendation of the administration, and also ask that the title change be put into this item. And if we can't get it into first reading, we can get it into second reading, which will be in December. Is that right?
That's right, sir.
Are you okay with that, Commissioner?
That's fine. And I invite the members of the QEC to come and speak on behalf of this reorganization and the fact that we're allocating even more resources and time to the one person, our chief education officer. So we'll let you know when that's going to take place.
Vice Mayor, okay? Go ahead.
Thank you. I just have a question. If someone can just inform me. The idea of the chief education officer, Mr. Woodruff, where did it come from? Did that come from the QEC?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, in other words, it's been part of the job, but now I think what we really recognize is that that's become the primary focus of the job.
I just wanted to make sure, because I remember what I saw first was a motion from the QEC asking for the creation of a department.
Correct.
The creation of a department creates a lot of fiscal burden for a municipal organization like ours, especially once a budget has been balanced. And so I met with members of the QEC, and I inquired more as to what it is that they were looking for. In essence, what they were looking for was to formalize in our organizational chart the functions that are already taking place, but not necessarily to create a new department. And I suggested to Beverly, well, maybe you want to consider the idea of a chief education officer, something that could be bounced around. I didn't realize that made it back to the committee and that the committee shared it with you. I'm very excited that the committee supported the idea of the chief education officer. Thank you, Beverly, for sharing it with Mr. Woodruff. I'm glad to see that what started off as an item that was not feasible has been changed and transformed into something that now is reflected to what your true intent was. Mm-hmm. So thank you for that. Thank you so much.
And would you guys like to sponsor this item with me?
No?
No, no sponsor?
No. Oh. You led on it.
What?
You led on it. It's your item.
Okay.
Yes. All right. So you've moved. I will second it. And are you okay? We'll move it back 3-0. We'll move it back. We're recommending that the commission adopt the recommendations of the administration, and we want to put this, we want to get this title change in, okay?
That's right,
and
sir.
Through an ordinance, right? And through an ordinance, right?
Yep. Yes. So the title will be changed, and we doesn't sound like we can get it in for Wednesday, but we'll get it in for second reading, and it'll be done in December, as opposed to having to wait 6 months, okay?
And you need us to come, is that what?
You don't need to, but we always enjoy seeing you, so.
Thank you. We'll let you know when it's going to be read so that you can come, because the second reading, I'm sorry, I was not ready.
Go ahead.
The second reading has public comment, so it would be nice for you guys to come and celebrate the chief education officer position that we created.
Can I just thank everybody? Thank you. Seriously, this was the whole for all of us, because quality education represents all the schools in the feeder pattern, all the commissioners, and this was something we voted 100% for. And finally, it's coming to fruition. As I said, I've been after over half a century, and we've been asking for this, and finally, you are making it possible. So
you got it. You got it.
Thank you.
Thanks, Beverly. Thanks, Julie. Okay, we're going to close this item. We have an 11:30. I'm 15 minutes late, but Commissioner Rosa Gonzalez, you've got item 15. Go ahead and tee it up for us.
Dr. Biaggi, if you'd like to come forward. I was approached by Dr. Biaggi, who's not only a famous cancer surgeon and doctor here in Miami and in Miami Beach, but also a resident and a musician. And there is an international piano academy that takes place in a Medici villa in Italy every summer. And she is spending an enormous amount of time and owns the Cadet Hotel and is housing the students and the teachers at the Cadet Hotel. And she is bringing this International Piano Academy to Miami Beach in winter, which is a wonderful thing. And eventually, we will place pianos across Miami Beach and have these impromptu concerts everywhere. This is the first year she is housing the students and the teachers. In the future, the New World Symphony has come forward and said that they would be very supportive, but we would need to waive the Botanical Gardens fee so they could hold their concerts there. I believe it's the first week of January. And this is going to be something very special, and I believe that you will really enjoy these musicians, the concerts. This is world-class piano musicians, and hopefully eventually this will grow into, Commissioner Ariel, exactly what you would like to see, these types of art deco cultural events and nothing okay, tacky let's, going on here.
Let me get the from staff. The request is the request for fee waivers at the Botanical, and is that within our authority under the contract?
It is. Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee
members.
The total ask is about $75,000. That is including the waiver of the Miami Beach Botanical Gardens facility usage fees. So that is for 4 days at $5,000 a day, a total of $20,000. The administration is also sponsoring this event through our on-stage program for $25,000 for artistic services.
Okay, so the fee waiver is $20,000, and that is possible through our contract, right?
That's correct. We have
a
management agreement.
Is that because we're a sponsor and...
I'm sorry?
Is that because the city's a sponsor and...
Yes.
And so if we sponsor it, then we can get that fee waiver, right?
That's correct.
Okay. And then you're sponsoring for another 25, so that's 45,000. So what's the difference between the 45 and the 75? That's, I think my math is $30,000.
That's what's correct.
Good morning, Doctor. How are you?
I'm very well.
Enjoyed seeing you last week.
Thank you. Likewise. That brought me memory when I, 42 years ago, I was asking for permits for my hotel. Brought me lots of
have
memories.
You? Did you receive them, or you're still waiting?
I'm here.
Oh,
yes,
okay.
I guess I did. It's been a long journey, but a very rewarding journey. Kind of grew with the city. The city grew bigger, and I grew older. But it's been a wonderful life here, a wonderful life. And when I hear about Goodwood, I go to Goodwood, to England, and it brings a lot of class. Everybody dresses like the 1930s, 1920s with hats, and he said what happens in Goodwood stays in Goodwood. So it's a lot of fun, a lot of great people coming. I'm not speaking for them. I'm not loving for them, but I just want to bring wonderful people to the beach. I will say, at this point, I'm a victim of what's going on in the city because we get broken in by incredible. It's none less. I mean, you put fences and you put hedges and you put cameras and they still. So I think bringing these and like Commissioner Gonzalez was saying, maybe have the presence of the police. The police feel like they are helpless because the following of the arrest is not successful. But if we bring and change the environment, more people will come. And now when I'm talking about my project, the reason I want to do this project is because I want to bring and be known as a culture city, as a music city. And we are giving scholarships. I am not charging anything in the highest week of the year for the room and board. I'm completely closing the hotel for for piano lessons, master classes, concerts, and the only thing that I cannot host completely is the concerts at night, because I want to bring my patients from Aventura who thinks this is a Wild West and they don't want to come to Miami Beach. And I want them to think differently by bringing their children. And it's going to be a free entrance. And as a matter of fact, I said to entice them even more, after the concert, you can come by the Cadet Hotel and free ice cream for your children and maybe a drink for the adults, which I will host. I just want to bring that sense of security and sense of pleasure to coming to Miami Beach. And I just feel like I feel very strong about that. I feel like music has sustained my life into beauty and joy. So I wanted to share. That's just my message.
Can I say one thing here?
Go ahead.
You know, Dr. Biaggi, we should speak to a couple of the bids, the Washington Avenue bid possibly, and the Lincoln Road bid, and see if they would put a piano on each of these streets during this event, and you bring some, maybe have a master class on Lincoln Road. It sounds crazy, but it would be so beautiful.
Terrific.
To do
even
this
electric
too.
Piano.
Yeah, even if because you send some of the students.
Moving a piano, grand piano is a major thing. I'm telling you, I'm paying $800 for every piano that I'm moving to my hotel. And I'm moving rooms out of the, I mean, beds out of the rooms to put pianos. So I know what it costs.
But point of order, Mr. Chair. Wouldn't that require a special event permit? Because I know a permanent installation, I tried last year exploring a permanent installation of a piano. It's a community piano, and Arts in Public Places recommended against it when I recommended it. Installing now a piano, that would require a special event or street performer permit?
No, it requires a special event permit, and that's only for 4 days.
So you can only
do a temporary special event.
Okay, so let's. I like this idea. What I do, where's the 25? 25 is coming out of your budget that's already appropriated,
it's
right?
It's from the Miami Beach Onstage program.
What is the difference between, I understand the 20 and the 25, that's already appropriated, but there's an ask for an additional 30. That's I'm unclear on that. So what is that?
I wish I could give you more details. The organizer, she's more or less made a budget to bring tickets for the teachers. They are coming, some from Europe, some from Utah, some from different parts of the United States, and we are giving local scholarships. I was hoping she was very clear. I would settle at this point, because we're already organized, I would settle at this point what the city in their generosity will help me getting. Grant you, I close
let
my
me,
office
let me do
today
this,
to come
because I think we want to help you. So,
yes.
Is the 25 is that's part of an organized program, right?
Yes.
And is that the max that you can award under your department, or?
Yes, for
okay.
this. Yes.
So let's do this, Commissioner. I'm supportive. I think this is going to be wonderful for the community. If you will move the 20 and the 25, and ask the administration to review the additional 30. The one thing, when we had a lovely meeting, the one thing I'd like to see is a little bit more detail on the proposal. So if you could give us, because the 20 is the fee waiver, that one's easy because mm-hmm. it doesn't involve cash. The mm-hmm. 25 is already appropriated, mm-hmm. but this 30 means I've got to go back to the money tree somewhere mm-hmm. and find $30,000 on a tree. And I'm open to doing that if I have a little bit more of a definite proposal. Commissioner.
Could I suggest something? There is a time. This event is taking place next month. Let's move forward and approve the 20 and the 25. And then if you wanted to come back to us and submit certain receipts after the event and the amount of up to what would we...
30
in the amount of up to $30,000. So as of right now, we will waive the botanical garden fees and you get the $25,000. And whatever, if you need the extras, then you will submit them to...
Like scholarships, scholarships to local students.
Here's what I can support. Because I don't want to have the category as a surprise. You need to give us right now what
would be up to $30,000, whether or not it's scholarships, mm-hmm. whether or not it's airfare, whether it's moving pianos.
Absolutely, I can.
Give us what that is, mm-hmm. so that we know that it's for a legitimate legal Absolutely. Purpose, right?
Absolutely.
And then I can support it. So I will, if you're making the motion to do the 20 and the 25 and up to 30, and then we'll make that as a favorable recommendation to the commission, but you have to bring us, this will be back on the agenda for December with a favorable recommendation, okay, from this committee. But before that December meeting, December 14th, you're going to give Lisette mm-hmm. a list of what would be covered up to 30, and she's going to tell us that it's legal and blah, blah, blah.
Perfect.
Okay. And if you can do that, I can support it. Is that okay?
That's wonderful. So, yes, I second your motion, and just make sure that you have an itemized budget up to $30,000 that you submit to Lisette and the city manager.
And it'll all – this is an all a reimbursable, okay? Mm-hmm. So we – the waiver is the easy one, but – and your $25,000 is reimbursable.
Well.
So that means you have to give the receipts even for the $25,000. You're going to have to give her – so the 30 plus a 25, you're going to have to do receipts. So don't put the same items for the 25 as for the 30, right? Because then you won't get the 30.
It's a different pocket.
Dr. Biaggi, one other thing. I see that we have the owner of the Ritz-Carlton who's around the corner from the Cadet Hotel, and I know that they have a beautiful grand piano there. So maybe one of your students would want to do a concert there one evening in the first week of January. It might be a beautiful thing because we're going to have these pianos.
And those are my patients. They would be very grateful.
Well, he's right over there, so maybe you want to say hi.
Commissioner. So,
the owners, not the management. I will be, and they're very eager. They have great disposition to serve. And at one point, the New World Symphony used to have musicians going through Lincoln Road and used to change the environment. And if we can contribute to that, our kids will be very, very happy to do it. So
I'm excited. I saw the videos of these concerts, and the performers are internationally renowned teachers, academics in music, and this is a wonderful event for my beach. Congratulations, you got it. We moved it.
Thank you to all of you. Thank you. And I missed you. I met you most of it, except Commissioner Arriola, where now I meet you. And thank you so much for your time.
Yeah. No. I think it's amazing what you're doing. So thank you and congratulations. You know, my question, I think, to dovetail some things my colleague said, you know, what else can we do to help you? I know that you're focused on the hotel and the botanical gardens and stuff, but obviously we have a lot of other performing venues throughout the city, think outside the box. Are there things that we can do to bring this to North Beach or other places throughout the city?
I would love it because we have so many young guys. They volunteer. They are so eager to play. They are not prima donnas. You met one that came that day for tea, and he plays jazz and he plays classical. And I call him, "Hey, come and Farah, come." And there's another academy that we're opening in Doral, which is thriving. And why Doral can thrive and we not thrive? So I am very open to just be the conduit, because I'm not a pianist. I'm mm-hmm. a frustrated musician. But I just go into medicine that I can take food to my house, but not as a musician. Yeah. I am very happy to share their willingness to play and to be part of the city.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that we do as a city is to try to create, one is legislation to allow this kind of thing. Sadly, I think we're too restrictive. This is why I'm pushing us to, be more creative when it comes to live entertainment. Fortunately, in the area you're in, it's allowed. But sadly, throughout the city, we don't allow live entertainment. So you can't play piano in most places in the city. Isn't that sad?
You know, it's so weird because people go volunteering just standing there for 2.5 hours or playing something in the Lincoln Road. They don't have permits.
Yeah.
And we don't say anything because they entertain the public, bad, good, or indifferent. It's life. Because I lived all the episodes, and I show you, I made a video of the history of my history in Miami Beach. I bought my hotel in 1982.
Wow.
and it was abandoned, boarded up after the war because it was vandalized. And many other owners temporarily, finally I bought it from the original owner who ended up being my patient. It's a long story anyway. And I worked diligently into bringing class and attracting beautiful music, beautiful people, very respectful service. And I feel like we are, and this is what I'm very happy to, I was so pleased to hear the Goodwood story, because the Goodwood story is a story. And I hope we're going to have a lot of public transportation that, like we planned for the boat shows, that people will park outside the city and come in buses, because they're going to attract a lot of people. And the traffic right now in the city is, well, I don't need to tell you. I think if we plan on this, this is a great event. And this is going to be another great event. So and we're going to bring great events to bring life back to Miami Beach. The nice life.
Doctor, if I don't move on to my other items,
yes,
people are going to start deducting money. Thank
you. We love you, Dr. Biaggi. Oh, by the way, Commissioners, Ariel and Richardson, Dr. Biaggi does have live jazz music at her hotel on Friday and Saturday nights. And I encourage you to go see not just the musicians jamming and what takes place there, but the beautiful environment. And Clark Gable stayed at the Cadet Hotel during World War II when he was actually training the officers on the beach. So that's why it's called the Cadet.
Okay.
Isn't it amazing what like live entertainment can do to a property, to bring a community together, celebrate the arts, if only we would encourage more of it. But, you know, gladly, I'm sponsoring something to try to get us to do that.
Okay.
Thankfully, 65% of voters voted for a cultural geobond to create more public spaces so that we can have this kind of amenity for our city. Sadly, voters were misinformed, because the Lincoln Lane project was actually going to create more cultural space to be used by our community, but it was shot down, so it'll just be a parking lot now.
I'm going to come listen to some jazz music on the weekend. Thanks so much. All right. With that item is closed, let me quickly go to number 9. This is an item, because we're going to hear this in the commission. I just want to let everybody know what. So this is something that for months I've been looking at this. The Bandshell, right now the Fillmore, the Colony, and the Bandshell have potential fee waivers, and the fees are paid out of the, I guess, a pot of money that gets generated from the Fillmore. I think there's still around $700,000 or $800,000 in that. This issue came to me because we're running out of slots at the Bandshell. There's more demand than supply. So we have 6 slots for the first 6 months and 6 slots for the second 6 months. And so I've proposed, and the Cultural Arts Council has done a motion to agree, that we increase that for the next year to add 6 more slots, 4 more in the first 6 months, 2 more, so it'll be 18. And also we're going to cap the, the support up to $2,500 if it's a one-day event, and $5,000. And that's because some people are getting money, a lot more money, and some people can't get any. So this is about equity. And so we're going to hear this in commission, but I want to get this out of committee. And if somebody will move that with that recommendation, we can send it to commission. It's going to be heard on Wednesday. Okay, then I'll second it. And Commissioner Rosen Gonzalez, are you okay with this? Okay, it's done 3-0. We'll close the item. Vice Mayor, you had an item. I think we've got some people here for. Is that item 8?
Yes.
All right, let's call item 8. Potential pedestrianization of 200 to 300 blocks of Lincoln Road and limited. Who's here from our staff that's going to speak to that? Anyone?
Mr. Chair, if I could just quickly.
Yes, tee it up for us, sir.
Sure, absolutely. I think we're all familiar with these blocks of Lincoln Road east of Washington Avenue. They certainly have not reached the potential that they could reach. And I think many people who walk on Lincoln Road or try to enjoy the area can attest to they don't feel the cleanest, they don't feel the safest, they don't feel the most attractive. And I think it's incumbent upon us to find a way of enhancing it. It's not just part of this commercial district. It's also our entrance to the beach. What should be the most beautiful entrance to the sands of our beach is actually at times quite scary, and it needs improvement. It's something that I've been trying to lead on since before being elected, and in the different boards I've served on, I've carried this theme about these blocks of Lincoln Road. Finally, there's a private partner that has come forward with resources to help move this in the right direction. And Mr. Chair, with your permission, I'd like to recognize them to speak and to advise a committee on how they feel they could partner with the city.
Thank you, Vice Mayor. Mr. Larkin, you're recognized. Go ahead. Introduce
Mr.
your
Chairman.
Team. Who do you have with you?
Peter Canabos from the Ritz-Carlton.
An owner?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Go ahead. You're recognized.
Thank you, sir. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners Michael Larkin, 200 South Biscayne Boulevard, here representing the Ritz-Carlton Ownership Group with Ms. Peter Canavas, also from the Ritz-Carlton Ownership Group. In summary, we're seeking a development agreement between the Ritz-Carlton and the city, and that will lead to the closure of the 200, 300 blocks of Lincoln Road to automobile traffic and a redesign of the 100 block. We have hired Kim Lee Horn as our traffic engineers, and they've already done substantial work. And we've hired Raymond Jungles, who was a landscape architect for 1100 block of Lincoln Road. We're hoping he will replicate his wonderful design on the eastern end as he did on the western end. Our requests here are twofold. We'd like for this committee to recommend to the full commission to instruct the city administration to enter into negotiations with the Ritz-Carlton. They'll culminate in a development agreement with the city of Miami Beach. It'll be three phases. We are responsible for paying all the soft cost for all the design for what we're describing. The city will pay the hard cost for the actual construction cost, and then we will come in the back end and manage the construction. This was the identical model the city employed when they chose to close 1100 block of Lincoln Road from Lenox to Alton Road. And then the second action we would like for you all to take is recommended to the full commission to adopt a resolution closing the 200, 300 blocks of Lincoln Road to automobile traffic subject to conditions. This is exactly, again, the same action the commission undertook back in 2008 that led to that great part of Lincoln Road. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Peter, and he's going to walk you through a presentation. Oh, PJ, please pull up the presentation.
Peter, you and I like to run things efficiently, so go ahead.
For the sake of brevity, I'm going to cut right through to slide six, or else I have
Thank
to
you.
Say next five times, whichever. Okay, right there, please. Thank you. I don't have to educate anybody here to the problems of the east end of Lincoln Road. I'm sure you're aware of them. But as neighborhoods deteriorate, property values stagnate, and so do revenues to the city. And the 200 and 300 blocks have been a drag on the values that of the whole neighborhood that radiate out in all directions, and I'm sorry to say, including our 100 block of Ritz-Carlton. In fact, we do follow-ups with our guests, and many of them will tell us that in order to access Lincoln Row, which is clearly one of the most well-known amenities of Miami Beach, they Uber around to the middle of the block. They circumvent the 200 and 300 block. And the store owners there will even tell you, because I've gone literally store to store, drumming up support for everything we're doing, and I talk to these people, and they'll tell us we're not doing as well down here as they are, you know, further west. So the Lincoln Road bid just received in excess of, I think, $50 million to upgrade Lincoln Road, and I would submit that despite that, the eastern blocks are going to be a drag on the performance there even after that happens, because after all, we really are the front door to Lincoln Road. We are the gateway to Lincoln Road. And could we go to next slide, please? You know, Any city has to renew its taxable base. That's how cities grow. And the way that we do that is by incentivizing and creating conditions that attract new investment. And the economies of revitalization are pretty much the same everywhere. So I come from Boston, and excuse me if I leave my R's out of certain words. Don't let it bother you. And we have a neighborhood there called the South End, and one time it was one of the most deteriorated parts of the city. So what happened was a few pioneers came in there, and they started renovating the brownstones. Well, that, you know, money attracts money, and that literally started the fire that lit and transformed that into the one of the most beautiful areas of the city, and the city, of course, was the ultimate beneficiary of that. The key is that someone needs to light the fire here and get the ball rolling. And the most cost-effective way, the path to do that is when a private enterprise initiates that without any front-end cost to the city to do it. And that is the case of what we're doing here. We have already spent significant monies hiring consultants for both the architectural and traffic studies. And we have tremendous community support out there. We've literally gone door to door. I don't think we've run into anybody that's not supportive of the project yet. And the only people that we haven't approached are the ones that are out of town. We can't see them, and we will eventually see them too. But once people see the physical manifestations of renewal, transforming the streetscape, cleaning up crime, raising the bar for property owners and operators to cash in on the new environment, the chain of upscaled valuation starts, and it ends with enhanced revenues for the city. That's the nature of our economic system. Investment attracts investment. But if we could go to next slide, please. Next one. Okay. There are other intangible values to what we're proposing here. We're really the geographic heart of the city here, and we're the place where we have the developing luxury hotel row coming from 17th Street North with the Bulgari, the Rose with the W and us. We have the convention center. Of course, we have the activity center of the entertainment district further south of us. We're dead smack in the middle. And I would argue, though, that when people come to Miami Beach, their impressions of Miami Beach are largely garnered by what they see right here in the center of the city, what they see along these blocks of Lincoln Road. And I will tell you that we do extensive follow-ups with our guests who stay at the Ritz, and many of them will say, nice hotel, not so good neighborhood, there's other places that we can consider going. So to a large extent, when we have visitors coming from Art Basel or just coming for whatever reason down here, their impressions of the entire city are largely formulated by what they see along this neighborhood that we're talking about, and it really hasn't been very good optics. And I would say that I want to thank Commissioner Rosen Gonzalez in particular. She's been very sensitive to the crime issues that we've had, but in all honesty, having half a dozen police cars parked in front of the Ritz every day is not good optics for our customers. It signals a combat zone. So what we're trying to do is another way through to obviate the necessity to have our people in blue policing these areas so intensively. And I think that one of the overall benefits that the city would have by revitalizing this area is just that image. We've talked about image and the kind of image we want to convey to the world. We've been dropping down in the list of destinations, and I think part of it is because of the bad publicity we've gotten with crime, and certainly spring break has something to do with it, but so does this area here.
Okay, I'm going to bring this back in because we got 15 minutes left,
right?
Okay? So let me ask a couple of questions,
sure.
And then Mr. Larkin, did you say you have or have not done the traffic study yet?
We have done the traffic study that shows that, and our traffic engineers are here, it shows that the diversion of automobile traffic is insignificant in creating a burden upon whether it's 17th Street to the north or 16th Street to the south. They'll simply go to those streets and then head toward Collins, but the amount of automobile traffic is minor, and we are working to relocate the bus routes. We have yet to meet with Miami-Dade Transit. We're trying to work with Commissioner Fernandez and have him be with, yes, go ahead.
There's one difference it seems to me, I was thinking about this after we talked, is that you've got four lanes of traffic there, whereas every other street that, because those are going to remain open, right? Or would that change?
Washington and Collins remains open.
Yeah, so Washington remains open. That's two lanes in each direction, whereas all the other streets crossing Lincoln are just one lane in each direction. So that's a difference. But your traffic people have looked at all that, right?
Yes. Correct.
Vice Mayor, go ahead. This is your item.
Yes.
What's your dream?
Listen, to complete the vision of Morris Lapidus, it was not my dream, it was Lapidus's dream, to continue the garden on Lincoln Road, to get people out of cars, and to activate those sidewalks with the activity of the businesses, because that's what's going to help those businesses bring better tenants in there, get people out of cars. So my request of this committee
is to send a recommendation back to the commission asking the administration to enter into negotiations with this development team and to also adopt a resolution for the closure of the 200 and 300 blocks of Lincoln Road subject to certain conditions and the partial closure of that 100 block to limit traffic there a little bit more. But this is, again, it's not my dream. It's a dream of Morris Lapidus, who had a vision of this at first.
So let me ask this, if one of my colleagues want to make that motion, when we say have them enter into negotiations, then the commission would have another bite at it after there was a negotiation, right? So that we would have to approve whatever's negotiated. So I would be supportive of that if one of my colleagues want to move that. All right, Commissioner Arreola has moved it. I will second it. And Commissioner Rosen-Gonzalez, would you like to speak on the item?
I'm in favor of any improvement. I don't know if you've walked over there, but there are potholes. This is an area that's long been ignored by the city. I was really shocked when I walked it after visiting the Ritz-Carlton because, you know, living in Mid Beach, I don't always go to that section of Lincoln Road, but I must say that it really is in need of improvement. So thank you for taking the lead, and Commissioner Fernandez too, the two of you, and you have my full support on this.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I just want to make sure that the motion includes also working with the proposers on a maintenance agreement for that 100 block and the beach walk. That we need to make sure it's safe, it's clean for everyone who wants to enjoy not just the commercial part of our city, but also the amenity of the beach.
Yeah. So we'll move it to the commission with a favorable recommendation, and then to the extent that the city is able to develop, come up with a development agreement, then we'll have a final look at that. It'll have to be approved a second time. So, it's done. We'll move it back to the commission, and then I don't think we can get this on the meeting on Wednesday, so it'll be heard on December 14th, okay?
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And then can you find the money for me to do it, okay? All right, thank you. One more thing. So I'm going to defer my item on – well, let me do it very quickly. Is Jose here on item 4? I'm going to do this
– and I'm going to defer 7.
And then I'm going to defer everything except for I just want a 2-minute clip on Española Way, a status report on where we're at, because that's the one that's next in line, right?
Sure,
we're doing some pedestrianization.
Yes, we are.
Okay.
Good morning or good afternoon, Mr. Chair, committee members. Jose Gonzalez, Transportation and Mobility Director. So at the September 30th Finance Committee meeting, this body directed us to move forward on an expedited basis with Española Way East, mm-hmm. West, and the 14th Place alleyway, and to come back today with an update. So as of September 30th, our consultant has been working the concepts for those three locations. The idea is to have a meeting with the community, a community meeting sometime after the new year, and then come back to this body with those concepts before going to the city commission.
So will you be ready by, I think we're going to try to do finance on January 20th. Will you be ready with those details on January 20th?
That gives us about 2 months. Yeah. I think we'll have something that we could come back and update you and show you.
Yes. Okay. Then we're going to, I want to see the details then on the 20th, okay? January. Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Vice Mayor, which item do you have number? Number 7?
We have 10 minutes left. I don't think I can discuss number 7 or even number 11 right now because I think they're a little bit more substantive.
So you want to defer this to January?
Yes.
Are you okay with that?
Yeah.
Remember the December meetings got canceled because of the change in the commission meeting. So which item, number 7, and which is the other item?
11.
11, we'll also show that as deferred.
And Mr. Attorney, for when we discuss number 11, I don't know if maybe Rob needs to be here or not.
I've discussed it with him. I'm prepared to address it.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry.
And so then item 5 is, was that deferred or is that Commissioner Miner's item? Is he online?
He was earlier. Let me check just 1 second.
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, Commissioner, how are you?
Good. How you doing? Thanks, Chair.
Yeah, so we've got a few minutes. What is, you want to tee that up? That's your item number five.
Yeah, thank you, Commissioner Richardson. I'll just speak briefly, and then I'll turn it over to John Rebar. Just a refresher, we've talked about this a number of times, just a refresher. It's a pilot program. It's not in Loomis Park. It's right outside the boundaries of Loomis Park, which I think is important. This same concept and same company has done the mini golf in New York City, Houston, San Antonio, great vibe, a separate company, but there's a mini golf coming to Brickell City Center. I actually had a friend who was on a cruise this weekend who emailed me saying that it was one of the most popular sort of events on the entire cruise. Very popular, positive activation. Kind of reminded me a little bit as I was listening, talking about Goodwood, very different, but you know, Goodwood is a great event, very supportive, but obviously it's a finite period. This would be something that would be literally every day, 365 days a year, high-end, custom-built design, art deco architecture. I mean, we're going to dictate the design, art deco, beach theme. It's going to bring in people. I'll sort of echo, and thanks, Commissioner, Vice Mayor Fernandez for mentioning. But yeah, I have been talking about that a lot, and I think I, in talking with residents from North Beach, Mid Beach, and even South Beach, obviously, south of Fifth, it really will bring people down to that area of the beach by Ocean and Fifth and Sixth, which doesn't happen now, which is unfortunate. The company would bear the risk and cost of this entire project, so there's no risk to, from an economic standpoint, to Miami Beach. Also, there would be a significant resident discount. And if I could just briefly, before we turn over to John, if I could just ask PJ to show a slide. Yeah, that's not the one, PJ. But so I'll turn it over to John. And maybe if you, I actually sent the picture, sort of an overview of what, sort of an aerial drone view of what it would look like. That's not either. That's okay. I'll turn it over to John. If you find, you can put it up later. Thanks.
John, go ahead. You're recognized.
Mr. Chair, is it a hard stop at 12:30?
We've opened the item, and so I could go past 12:30 with the item, but I bet we can get it, I bet we can do it by 12:30. Go ahead.
Very good. PJ, if you could also bring in Jonathan Rockefeller and Kim Rogers in case any questions are posed to them. I'm going to change gears a little bit. I was going to switch it over to Rockefeller to do the presentation, but I'm going to try to be brief, but they're on the line.
Sure.
If you have any questions. PJ, could you also put the map you just had up of Loomis Park? I want to start off, Commissioner Miner said, we are not talking about doing this in the park proper. This is a spoil area. It's the underutilized area. We took a look at the uses of the spoil area. Different events are there, different functions, and we identified the area between 5th and 7th Street. That would be on the right of the photo to the south, and it's in green. That is the most underutilized area of the spoil, and what's nice about that is we have a restroom right on 6th. So if you put any activation in that area, there's a restroom nearby, which is especially important for families. We're talking about a pilot program. When we did receive commission direction, we were looking for, it was directed to us, let's go for, instead of a three-year, go for a two-year with 3 one-year renewals. This would not be a full-year activation, looking at weather, looking at lighting, everything. Looking for more of the provider, we're looking for like a November through April activation. For 26 weeks, operational hours around 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. And very little cost to the city. We'd be looking at permitting. We would help them out with the permits. We already do janitorial at the park and any electrical needs. Other than that, everything would be on the vendor Rockefeller. Different price structures. Actually, PJ, could you start a slideshow so I don't have to repeat it? Next slide. I'm going to skip some of the company overview. Okay, I'm going to stop here. In that area between 5th and 7th, we have option A and option B. And we're fine from Parks and Recreation Department, either option. But we do like B a little bit better. That's the furthest south. Why do we like that? Because then that activates that area. It leaves everything north of it. available for other activations rather than create a little gap with that area to the south. So either one would be fine with us, but we're recommending option B. That's the southernmost spot.
Let me ask a question just so I can get this framed. I actually didn't realize it was still here at the committee. I thought we heard this item in the commission a couple of months ago, didn't we? And because I remember there was some question about having a competitive procurement versus a non-competitive. So is this the non-competitive? So this is the non-competitive?
Yes, sir. That item did come in front of commission of whether or not one to go out to bid. And the direction of the commission was, no, continue to work with these folks. And gave us some parameters. What are the public benefits? What's in it for seniors? Make it a 2-year, not a 3-year. So we're back now with the direction we received from that commission meeting.
Okay.
Chair, can I comment on that as well?
Yes, certainly, Commissioner. Yeah. Go ahead.
No, it's a fair question. And initially, and I'll try to say this succinctly, though, it was put out multiple times for industry bid on multiple occasions. Staff had taken the position that it was competitively bid. So ultimately, Rockefeller was awarded. There was one individual who had felt that the process was unfair. And being that I'm sensitive to the competitive bidding process, I did bring it back to commission to put it out for competitive bid, but that failed. So we the commission had already approved negotiating with Rockefeller based on the bidding process that had proceeded prior. And this is the continuation of that negotiations with Rockefeller.
Thank you, Commissioner, for reminding me of the. I appreciate that.
Sure. I had a slide that unfortunately didn't make it. But if I could just add, as before John continues, that the two areas there that he's showing, the picture I was going to show, and if maybe PJ could find and show it, it actually, and I took it randomly from Google, so I didn't have any advance. There was actually the city had service vehicles parked there. There was some kind of staging area. It was a good picture because it kind of showed that there it is. So it's a little hard to see, but there's vehicles there. There's kind of some kind of staging area the city was using. What I'm trying to show here is that it's not a utilized area, and there's no use to it other than the city was parking some of its materials there. Thanks.
Thank you, Commissioner. And then the other question I have is, like with Goodwood or these other things, is that a footprint that they're going to need? Because that's, you mentioned November to April.
Right. I would have to get with Marcia and the team to see. I don't know the details of the Goodwood. It's a very small space, but I don't want to speak for Goodwood and Marcia and Lissette. So we would need to take a look at that for sure.
Commissioner Rosen Gonzalez, or Commissioner Areola. Vice Mayor, go ahead.
Okay. I'm supportive.
Yeah, I'm lukewarm to this. I mean, this is not my my cup of tea for my vision of Loomis Park. Mini golf is it's a bit of a novelty. Typically, the roadside attractions, in second, third tier markets. Myrtle Beach, these kinds of things, and not the image that we're trying to elevate Miami Beach, particularly this area that we've struggled to reimagine. And I think this is more consistent with where we're at today versus where we're trying to go in the future. I've vocalized this in the past. I've been very tepid and lukewarm to this. I don't want to, kill this in the crib, but, we just passed, a major cultural geobond initiative. We've taken more steps now than when this first was proposed. We're seeing some real activation and programming coming to the area. We've redone Ocean Drive in terms of the pedestrianization of the street. I don't want to set back the little bit of momentum we've set for ourselves in this area and maybe, send a message out to the public like, no, we're going to be kind of a carnival, literally a carnival type setting, because this is the kind of thing you find in a carnival, mini golf and stuff, although this would be hopefully more tastefully done. But I'm not going to be supportive because it's just this is not what I envision for the area.
Vice Mayor?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm amenable to this as a pilot program. To me, you know, and please clarify, is this a two-year agreement or a three-year agreement?
Well, if it went to the full commission, we would recommend a two-year agreement with 3 1-year renewals.
Okay, so between the initial term and the options to renew is a total of 5 years.
Correct.
And so to me, that's not a pilot program. To me, a pilot program, let's say 6 months. Let's try this out for 6 months. Let's see if it works. Let's see if it doesn't work. I get concerned when in our public areas we're commercializing it and charging $25 for people to use it. And I think even the discounted rate, some of our residents and seniors won't be able to really enjoy this at $18. So I don't like commercializing for an extended period of time public spaces. And I feel this would be commercializing this area. If it were a six-month period of time to test it, I would feel comfortable with that if it were a shorter period of time. So I'll leave it at that. I don't vote in this committee, but I think just for the benefit of the sponsor whose good intentions I know, I just want to put it out there. I don't like commercializing these areas, but if we're going to pilot it, let's pilot it for a shorter period of time. Let's try for 6 months. If there's success with it, then let's look at extending it. But, you know, I don't think a possible five-year commitment is really what we should be looking at in this area right now. Thank you. Yeah.
So, and to the sponsor, Commissioner Minor, I know that your intentions are exactly in the right place, but I'm more aligned with the position of Commissioner Arriola and Commissioner Fernandez in that I don't think it's a pilot when it's that long. The other thing is in public space. And the other thing is my friends and supporters have said to me, please, David, not goofy golf or putt-putt golf in Loomis Park. It's not arts and culture, and that's not what we want. Commissioner Minor, I am not about killing off somebody's item in committee because I think everybody should have an opportunity. This is a place where we vet it, so you're not going to have the support for it to move out favorable. But if you wish for it to be moved back to the commission, I will support that because I think that's fair to do that for any member. So is that your wish that you would like it moved to committee, a commission to have a conversation there? Because you're not going to have the support to move it with a favorable recommendation.
Yeah, I'd like to, not for November meeting, but yeah, and it's sounding more and more like I won't have the votes. But I would like to bring up, a couple of things where I've heard today, and, we tried to modify some of the comments that I've heard as we've discussed this over time, and some of this does address that, but then I'm hearing additional sort of roadblocks, which is obviously, things change and opinions change as we do more due diligence, so I don't mean any disrespect with that, but, I completely get the certain. I actually had someone who is, I would say, one of the leading forces in the arts and culture. And he actually told me when he first heard about this, he had that similar reaction. But the more he's looked not only into what this proposal is, but to other jurisdictions and other municipalities that have utilized and have had incredible success with it, he actually is completely on board with it and does consider it consistent with arts and culture. Again, because this is going to be a custom design for the Art Deco. So, I get the comments. I understand them. I don't take it personally. I'm not insulted by it. But if I didn't fully believe that this could have such a tremendous impact, and obviously a pilot, it's not 6 months. It's a little longer because there's some economic forces at work here that, because it is a custom design, there's a fair amount of considerable expense to the producer of this item. So 6 months, from my understanding and talking to John Rebar, that was not feasible for them. So that's why the sort of longer pilot program. But I guess I have looked into the other municipalities, where they've utilized it, where it's worked, and it's been such a huge success. I thought it was worth a shot in seeing how it can impact the area here, improve sort of the environment, the public safety. But yeah, sort of that was a long-winded way, Commissioner Richardson. But yeah, I would like to bring it back to Commissioner.
Okay.
Thank you.
So and one thing that I could probably support is a true pilot, what I would really call a pop-up. Pop it up for 6 months, and then it's done. And if it's wildly successful, then but I get the economics. I don't know what the build-out cost is, but maybe the vendor could do a pop-up here and do a pop-up in another city and recover the capital cost that way. Go ahead, John.
There may be an opportunity for a pop-up. I was speaking with them earlier on that, months ago on that. I could revisit that.
Yeah, the other thing is that we just got through talking about the Goodwood, and I think they're going to need all this space, and we're talking that's going to be March of 23 if that moves forward. So if Commissioner Rosen Gonzalez and Commissioner Ariola, if you're agreeable, we'll move it back to the commission for a conversation and without any recommendation one way or the other. And Commissioner Minor, you've got some comments here, and to the staff, maybe look into whether or not there's a way to do a pop-up.
And just a question.
Yes, Vice Chair.
And perhaps Commissioner Minor, as part of doing a pop-up, I got that the idea is for them to construct something that is aligned with our iconic Art Deco architecture. Maybe as part of the pop-up, maybe they don't do that specific construction. Maybe they have something a little bit more generic that reduces that cost for them that they could use in a temporary pop-up, a six-month pop-up. Something like that, I'm more inclined to support, just to gauge the success for it.
Understood, Vice Mayor. And that's what they do now. When they went to New York and then to Houston and to the other cities, they took the same Pixar putt. It was like, Pixar licensing. Perhaps we could get on a rotation of something, bring that to the commission for consideration.
Thank you.
I will support a pop-up. But I will not. This 5 year, I can't support that, and there's too much uncertainty with what we're going to need in terms of the space and everything. So, but we'll show the item move back to commission for a conversation there with no recommendation, favorable or unfavorable. We'll just move it. So, Commissioner Minor, thank you for being patient, and I apologize that you had to wait so long. I apologize.
No. Not at all. It was good discussions today. Oh, just one quick clarification from John. The 2 years, though, it's probably not going to make a difference for this item, but we would have the option to terminate after 2 years, correct?
I believe we have the option to terminate at any point.
That's right. They're renewals at the city's option.
Right.
Correct. Thank you.
When they go to the vendor, just make sure that they understand that we're looking at a commitment with Goodwood, because Goodwood is going to be a priority for me. Anything that interferes with that, I will not be able to support, because my commitment has been to support Goodwood as a transformative part of the month of March.
And I will put that on the record as well. I think it's going to be transformative. I'm very supportive. And the only way that I can support this is a pop-up. I'm thinking in the 6 month, that's it. And if the economics don't work, then I'm not going to be able to support it. Okay. All right. With that, members, thank you for being, thank you, Commissioner Minor, for joining us with that. Thank you. Kathy, once again, welcome. We appreciate it. John, we'll be throwing those rose petals at you on Wednesday and thanking you for all your kind work and well wishes to you. All right. We're adjourned.